15th, Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting to order. It's 6:32 p.m. And we'll have a roll call, please.
Yes.
Member Barnidge?
Here.
Member Tally?
Here.
Member Waggy?
Here.
Member Lee?
Here.
And Chairman Hagman?
Here. At this point in time, we'd open up the meeting for anyone that had public comment on items that are not on the agenda. Seeing none, we'll move on to the next item. And that would be approval of the minutes from the July 21st meeting.
And we do have a question. Sorry. We do have a correction on the first page of the minutes. It's page 3 of 33 in your packets. The second paragraph should read minimum pool rather than minimal pool.
Committee member comments on the minutes?
I will be abstaining since I was not at the meeting.
I too will be abstaining since I was not here as well.
Okay.
I'll move approval.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 And the record will note 2 abstentions. Okay, next item is the operations report.
Okay, so to date, the lake is at 461.12 feet. Storage is 12,138 acre feet. The capacity is 24.8%. Rainfall to date is 0, and that's since July 1st of this year. The plant production is 2 million gallons per day, MGD. Downstream release is 4.3 MGD, and the state water is 2.8 MGD.
Thank you, Andrea. Any questions or comments from the committee or the public? I think we're going to have a little more conversation about the operations at the plant, also a little bit later in the meeting, so. With that, we don't need a motion for that, do we?
No.
Okay, thank you. We'll move to item 5, the information items.
Good evening. I'm Joanne Hilker from the Public Works Finance Division. And I'm here to update you tonight on some staffing changes in our finance division in Public Works. I'm sad to say tonight is my last Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting as your Zone 3 accountant. I was awarded a promotional opportunity in Public Works, so I'll still be Public Works. But I'm sad to leave this position. I've really loved this job. It's interesting and it's meaningful, and there's so much positive collaboration. And I want to thank you all for being so welcoming. We have already hired a great replacement for me. Behind me is Christy Smith. She's in the blue-green shirt. And she'll be the new Zone 3 accountant. She comes she's with Public Works. She's been with the county in Public Works for 15 years and has a lot of sound technical skills, so you'll be in really good hands with her. And I'm also 2 cubicles down for when questions arise for transitional training as well. And I have some other real good news for you tonight. As you all probably knew Will Clemens, who was our finance division manager, and he recently was promoted in the county to a department head of our central services department. So he is no longer our public works finance manager, but after a long, extensive, broad recruitment for this very important position, Straith Smith Sinart too was chosen to be our Public Works Finance Manager. She's behind me. I'm going to invite her up here to say a few words about herself. She may be a familiar face to you because she was a previous employee of Public Works, and she comes to us with a lot of Public Works and county experience. We're really, really lucky to have her. So I'll invite Straith up to say a few words.
Good evening. Again, my name is Straith Smith Sinart, and I'm
very pleased and honored to be part of Public Works again and to be the Finance Division Manager. I wanted to give you a brief background about myself. I'm a CPA, Cal Poly grad. My background has been in, prior to coming to the county, I was in public accounting for a while. I worked for a nonprofit, also in private industry, and then I came to work at the county in 2003, and I started at Public Works. And to top it all off, I started working with Flood Control Zone 3 and CSA 12, so I feel like I've come back home again and gone full circle. So I've in the time that I was gone from Public Works, I worked there for 7 years. I worked in another department, and then I also worked in the auditor's office where I supported Public Works finance group, both with their systems and software. So I've been connected to Public Works for a very long time. But I'm very glad to be part of this group again, glad to be back in Public Works and involved with Zone 3. So thank you.
Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Any questions from committee members?
Pardon me?
I was just asking if there's any questions from committee members. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you.
Joanne, were you going to cover the fourth quarter? Yep. Oh, come on up.
You're on.
Whenever you feel like it.
Not done yet.
We're just hanging around.
We just want one last shot at you,
okay? Okay, Joanne Hilker again from Public Works Finance Division. I'm here to report on the fiscal year 2015-16 fourth quarter report, which is through June 30th of 2016. At the summary level, 84% of the total budget was expended last fiscal year, which left a balance available of approximately $740,000. However, of that amount, about $578,000 will be carried into this fiscal year 16-17 for ongoing efforts. That leaves about $162,000 of savings from 15-16, which I'm going to talk about in just a second. In the packet, there are three graphs reflecting the budget versus actual expenditures for the year. The first graph displays the routine operations and maintenance, and as of fiscal year 15-16 year end, expenditures were 95% of the budget, which resulted in approximately $183,000 of savings. About $21,000 will be carried into 16-17 for continued efforts. Most of the savings was due to staffing vacancies. So our water system superintendent position has remained vacant since February 2015, creating a lot of the savings. The administrative assistant position was vacant for most of the third quarter. It's filled now. And we had a water worker, which was temporarily loaned over to the Los Osos Fund. And before coming back to Lopez, that person retired. So we're currently recruiting for that water worker position. The second graph shows the non-routine operations and maintenance. Expenditures were 55% of budget, resulting in approximately $278,000 of savings. In fact, all of that carries into 16-17 for continued work. And the majority of the savings there is due to the Lopez Water Rights Habitat Conservation Plan, and that is explained further in your quarterly report. Most of the non-routine efforts carry into next year along with the budget availability. The third graph represents capital outlay. And expenditures were 64% of the budget, resulting in about $278,000 of savings, which does carry into this year for ongoing efforts. And Josh or Jill from Utilities will provide you with a more detailed explanation of the projects as we get further along in the agenda. So as I mentioned, we have about $162,000 of savings from 15-16 year end. That will be finalized next month. We're going through the calculations, but it's going to be real close to that amount. Generally, those savings are issued back to your agencies as credits. And generally, we mail out those credits along with your second installment invoice, November 1st. However, tonight, I believe Jill is going to brief you tonight on a possible use of some of those savings and then bring back an agendized item for your November 17th meeting for your consideration and vote. So we won't be mailing out the second installment invoices and the credit memos on November 1st. We're going to wait till that November 17th meeting and see what the presentation is and what your determination is regarding this savings. So the invoices will be a little bit later this year. This concludes my report. I'd be happy to answer questions if you have any.
Committee members have any questions? I had one. The routine O&M, we had about $183,000 in savings and $21,000 coming back. You're taking the other $160,000 with you to the new department, or where's that going?
Right. Except for I'm still in Public Works. Oh. No, so that $162,000 is the credit for 15-16.
Oh, okay.
And normally we would issue that back to you.
Gotcha.
But Jill's going to talk a little bit more about something that you may want to consider using some of that.
Good.
So we will either be issuing that whole amount back to you or a portion of, depending upon what you all talk about.
That's where the credit comes from.
Yeah.
I assumed that, but I didn't see it here. So.
Okay, thanks. Any other questions?
Any questions from the public on this item? Seeing none, we'll move to the next item, which is, thank you, Joanne. Appreciate your help all these years. The projected reservoir levels. Jill has this one.
Jill Ogren, Public Works. Wish I had good news on this front. I guess there is a little element of good news, and that is that we are still on the projected track, which happens to be downward. If you can see in your packet there, the graph, I did want to note we actually are in the process of we're storing state water, which is why previous, I believe in July when I was here, we anticipated hitting the 10,000 acre foot mark somewhere around November 1st. And if you can look on the chart, you can see where it's headed more like December 1st now. And part of that is because we've been using more state water. So in effect, we're actually storing state water. Therefore, we're not hitting that 10,000 mark quite as soon. So we've actually made a little improvement in terms of preserving our supply at Lopez. Which also goes a credit to all the agencies for continued water conservation. But it will eventually hit the 10,000 mark, and that's actually a trigger for our low reservoir response plan to make another kind of a retroactive change to each agency's entitlement. So we'll see what that looks like probably in November. I'll bring back maybe what the outcome of the next step is with the 10,000 acre foot mark heading our way. So. I think that's all I really wanted to bring attention to. You can see that that there is like a pink shaded line there, which is just a little bit below the green one, and that actually represents what actually happened in the last 3 years. So if we had similar rainfall, similar usage, as we did in the past 3 years, we would expect the storage to go down at that rate. The green dashed line actually shows that we would have gotten a little bit of rain. So if you see at the bottom of the chart, we've got the light blue bars. Those are projected, anticipated rainfall, and we use something called long-range forecast, and they're one of the only websites, agencies that projects in inches per month. And so there really isn't any good long-range forecasting. I don't know if you all saw the article that John Lindsay said that anything beyond basically 12 hours just gets progressively, like exponentially worse as far as projections. So now we're trying to project 6 months out. So we have to kind of take this rainfall graph at the bottom with a little bit of, knowing that our soils are extra dry, and even if we get some of that rain, we're not going to see it instantly as a runoff into the reservoir. It's going to probably soak into the ground for a good long time before we actually see increased runoff and an increase in reservoir levels. So, any questions?
I have one. When were we going to hit the 10,000 acre feet mark? It was going to be November, but now it's December, so mm-hmm. a month later from using state water.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, we've actually been storing. I think we are currently at around 263 acre feet of stored state water, so that's helping the situation.
Right. Thank you.
And perhaps you answered the question. So my question was going to be if are you accounting, are you subtracting that amount of state water from the Lopez water to get to arrive at that 10,000 point to trigger the next phase, or are you not?
Well, in effect, no, I am not. In effect, when we take more state water, we're preserving the supply of Lopez. So the fact that but on paper, it looks the opposite. I'm almost sorry that I'm getting into this conversation because it's really hard to explain. But if you see it on paper, but the fact that we are taking additional state water, and that is a good thing. And we are on paper storing it at Lopez because everybody has a certain amount of water, and it's only the state water can only be used by other state water contractors.
Right.
But in the pipeline, it's molecules of water, which.
So your answer is no when it hits 10,000, regardless of
exactly.
the accounting for the water.
Exactly. 10,000 is 10,000.
According to the way this is all worked out.
Right.
Thank you.
Right, exactly.
Jill.
Just to clarify a point and then a question. One is, to be clear, there's no actual state water in the reservoir. Yes.
Correct. Yes.
And secondly, could you talk a little bit about the bottom... I guess line there, which is kind of the orangish checkered line. What does that represent?
So each agency, since we've entered into the Low Reservoir Response Plan, the LRRP, each agency, we've gone to more of what we call a storage model. So every agency, each year that they save and they don't use some of their entitlement, we roll that forward for their use in subsequent years. So that orange line represents all water that has already been designated. It belongs to some agency in certain quantities already. So there isn't extra water or it's just all designated. It already has a purpose.
So it's essentially allocated water.
Exactly.
So what would happen if everybody wanted that water right now?
Then we would be down almost to the minimum pool, which is 4,000. So the purpose of the LRP and going to the storage is that it encourages agencies to conserve because now you have a set amount of water that you can use in subsequent years. But once we get below, as you can see, once that orange line gets down to 4,000, there, no matter how much more water you save this year, there is no extra water to move forward into the following years. And that's actually, you brought up a good point, and we are taking that discussion to TAC next month. Like, what happens to this water that if we get below 4,000 and on paper, they've stored water. How do they get it? They can't get below 4,000. That's another issue we're working on is there a way to utilize the water and obtain the water that's below minimum pool? So we're kind of looking into that simultaneously with some other things. But, yeah, it's not a – we're getting – I think the good news is that, you know, we're using about 4,000 acre feet, maybe less, in a year. So we've had probably another year's worth of water, you know, assuming we got zero infiltrate, you know, we got zero rain. So we have about another year before we're – you know, we all have to, well, we're thinking about what to do in a year, let's say. We're not waiting until we get to that point, but we definitely know the situation.
So. Jill,
mm-hmm.
Maybe you can help me here. You know, I've been just reading about the water, really haven't been coming to the zone meetings. So you have three state water purveyors in the basin. Is that?
Five.
Five state water.
I think it's. There's three in CSA 12 and two of the major contractors, which is Oceano and Pismo.
Okay, so I was just trying to figure out my mind because I could only count three. So, what of course, we realize they're just molecules, but how much of it is state water?
It's about 263 acre feet.
263 acre feet. That's what I came up with between the five, correct?
Yes. Yes. It was on the monthly operations report, and I just realized that it didn't get included in your packet. You would have seen that number, but we can send that out after the fact.
Okay, great. That'll help. Yeah. Thanks.
Any other questions? Questions from the public? Seeing none, thank you. Thank you, Jill. Okay. I think, Andrea, are you going to do climate update?
Yes.
Okay.
So as you can see, there's not a whole lot of change from this month to last month. I studied the map from July and September, and it's exactly the same. So what that means for us here on the Central Coast is that we're still
in extreme drought to exceptional drought. And then the forecast for September compared to July is for temperatures, we are expected to achieve above average temperatures, and that was the same for July.
And NOAA predicts that
NOAA predicts that the precipitation for September is that we have equal chances of being below average, average, or to above average. And again, that's exactly the same as last month. So nothing new to report, unfortunately.
You have any questions?
Thank you, Andrea. And our last informational item is the Habitat Conservation Plan update. I think Jill's going to cover that one.
Thank you. Sorry.
Hi again. So as far as the Habitat Conservation Plan goes, we met, I believe, in July. We gave an update at that point, and we had met with the State Water Resources Control Board, kind of wanted to go over how we were proceeding with our water rights permit and kind of get their feedback. And at that time, they told us that we had kind of envisioned that we were able to work separately on our water rights permit aside from the HCP, and that they could kind of be operating separately. After meeting with the State Water Resources Control Board, we kind of found out that it was they're going to work together, and they're going to pretty much move forward. That being said, one other item has come up, and that was the contractors at the TAC identified that they were interested in doing some modeling of a storage model to see how that could affect the changes that they would like to make in the water supply contracts. So the consultant that we used on the HCP, who had provided a baseline model of the reservoir, was asked to provide a proposal to do this additional modeling to help the contractors evaluate the impacts of a storage model on the water supply in the reservoir. And so at this point, we received the proposal from E-Corp. We gave that out to the TAC members and the agencies there. They've given their feedback, and E-Corp is now revising their proposal to reflect the changes by the contractors. We've also, at the TAC level, identified a potential source of funding for this modeling. At the moment, you know, roughly, it could change a little bit, but we're looking at about $100,000 to do this additional modeling to help with the contract changes. And as Joanne mentioned, the agencies are slated to get $160,000 worth of credits. So it was the TAC had some suggestions, and we'll bring this item back to you with the E-Corp final proposal. But they're recommending that they use the credits that they would get this year to help fund the additional modeling. But we'll bring that item back for you in November, because at the TAC, we didn't have everybody represented, so I didn't have 100% consensus on using that, so I decided to defer it until November, and I can make sure that everybody's on board. Any questions?
Great, thank you, Jill. Questions? Questions from the public? Thank you, Jill.
Okay. I'll just stay up here.
Okay, next item. Yeah, next item is the capital projects update.
Yes. So as Andrea alluded to, or I think you did actually, Brad, that we would go over some of the plant operations issues that we're having. Today's recommendation that we're coming to you is to reevaluate the capital improvement projects that you had initially approved back in April, and then was put into the budget and approved by the Board of Supervisors in June. Since that time, and this has happened all very rapidly, is we've identified another large project that needs to occur at the plant, and it's related to the low reservoir water levels. We're experiencing an increase in pH, which is the hardness of the water, which results in a lot of operational issues for us. It builds a scale up on all the different pieces of equipment, strainers, pumps, and so we are doing as much maintenance as we can, because the plant actually can't function if there's so much buildup. It's like everything gets clogged. That being said, we had Kennedy Jenks, a consultant that helped us with the water treatment plant upgrade in 2007. We had them relook at what can we do to solve this problem. They had already done this back in 2008, and they came forward. Again, we just received their report, and we're estimating sort of a temporary and permanent solutions to cost somewhere around $625,000. This is obviously this is more than what we annually allot, which is about $550,000. On top of that, some of the fact that we've had a lot of scaling is requiring us to readjust some of the projects that we thought we might do over a course of years. We're having to do some of them right now. So when we've basically rearranged, we've deferred some projects. We're moving other projects to do this year. The net increase is $280,000 in capital outlay. So normally we come up with a slew of projects that's roughly about $550,000. Now we're relooking at all the projects, and we're actually needing an additional $280,000. So in the packet that you have here, it kind of explains the sort of this plant crisis with the water hardness. The plant stopped working for about 12 hours due to this, and that's really unacceptable. We actually have to move forward on this. So it's a matter of rearranging the funding to get this all to work. So Joanne and her illustrious crew has been very helpful with us and identifying what projects we think we have savings from, other projects that we can defer to the next couple years, and a couple other little areas where we found funding, so to speak. But at the end of the day, we're still short $280,000. And so we come to you today with the recommendation, and it's tax recommendation, that we use the money that's in the district designated reserves to fund this $280,000. I guess it's $280,500. So today we're looking for the advisory committee's approval to do that. I'll let you think about that for just a minute while I'm going to actually have Joshua. He's our capital improvements project manager, and I'm going to have him give kind of an update on where we with the existing projects that we already had underway, and tell you a little bit about the projects that are listed, the Turnout SCADA project, equipment replacement program. Some of the items that we're going to continue working on, and then at the bottom you can also see projects that we're deferring. So does anybody have any questions before I...
Will the specifics go back to TAC before it goes to the Board of Supervisors on the specifics on the, because in the staff report it talks about sort of what's staff's recommending, and it to me it just, I mean, have they gone over it and they're completely okay with all of the details and exactly what the project is and what it entails, and they've gone over it?
Yes. Okay. The form that you have in your packet with all the projects here, we went over in detail with them, going over all the projects and making sure that they were on board with us deferring certain projects. One thing that will happen here shortly is we already need to start our budget process for 17-18. So we'll be able to look at all these projects that we've deferred and reprioritize them. But I think that the TAC was in agreement that the items that we've listed we have to do this year. There's really sort of like it's not really much of a choice.
Right, right. Okay, that's my only question right now. Thank you.
Okay. Any other committee members at this point? Ed?
Yeah. I'm just going to comment going back on my chemistry background. Basically, the lake is turning more basic as it draws down, which makes more scale, so you have to add acid like you would vinegar in a coffee pot to clean up
exactly.
The scale. You're going to make it more acidic, dissolve everything, otherwise the plant ceases to operate. So I don't see where we have any choices. What's the best answer to solve the problem? And you know, we'll defer to the experts on that. I would agree with the TAC. We have to do it, or we just won't have any lake water.
Right, and that's essentially it. It's like adding. We're going to be adding acid, and we've been sort of trying to make this work for the last month. And we're spending so much money on maintenance, and because now we're cleaning things that we would normally clean once every 6 months, every 2 weeks. It's like it's not possible to keep at this pace. So the money that we might spend on this capital improvement project, you know, in the long run, it's going to save us money on the operations and maintenance end of things. Absolutely
Thank
right
you.
On that.
I have a quick question. So, thanks. So, if we're about to potentially allocate the $280,500, how much would be in the capital reserves remaining
after that?
After that.
I don't. Let me get our accountant.
So again, we're talking about one of the three reserves. This is the district-funded designated reserve. And in the 16-17 budget, it was page 8 of your budget books, we projected a little over $1 million as of June 30th, 2017. Several meetings ago, you all decided to earmark some of that for specific projects. Should I hand this out?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll keep one. So what Jill's handing out will look familiar to you, because in the conversation you all had a couple meetings ago, you asked that these specific earmarked projects, including the Carpenter Creek Bridge, the cloud seeding, Santa Maria groundwater basin, and the Arroyo Grande Creek Watershed Stormwater Resource Plan. You wanted our Board of Supervisors to recognize that it was your intention to earmark those funds. It didn't commit it, but it earmarked it. So of the 1 mil that we have in that designated reserve, after deducting those 1, 2, 3, 4 earmarked projects, there will be about $559,000 left. So what we're proposing is we take $280,000 of that $559,000. So it's about half.
And again, this is of, maybe you could just touch on again, Joanne, the three reserves.
Sure.
For the committee's.
Yeah. So one of the reserves is contractor-funded reserves. Those are monies we collect from you and put in specific reserve accounts in your funds that we maintain. And there's about $190,000 total in there, not a lot, but basically what we use that for is to help balance out the $550,000 every year. So we typically bill you a $550,000 for capital. We have a year that we might need $600,000. We would continue to bill you $550,000 and maybe dip into your reserves to fund the difference. And then in other years where we don't have quite $550,000, we would still bill you $550,000 and put the excess into those reserves. So it's a rate.
It's like a rate stabilization.
Stabilizing method. So those are contractor-funded reserves. We then also have district-funded operating reserves. Again, that is left over from basically the Prop 13 money, and that's about 50% of our O&M that we maintain in that reserve for an unexpected catastrophe. So we're not talking about touching that. We're still proposing to leave those funds intact. It's the district-funded designated reserves, kind of the residual, that totaled this $1 million and that your commission a few meetings ago decided to start earmarking that for our board's recognition.
So now it looks like in our prior discussions that $560,000 was for public safety related to water quality purposes.
It was a generic title for future earmarking.
Similar to the situation we find ourselves in right now.
Yeah.
And then does this, that particular reserve, the third one we talked about, Disney Funny Reserve, does not at this point have a mechanism to replenish itself? Is that correct?
No, it does not, because the Prop 13 funds that are coming into flood control zone 3 per your agency contracts, we spend those funds against the COP bond obligation every year. So it reduces, per your contracts, we use our Prop 13 money to pay for a portion of that COP bond, which reduces what you all are billed every year. So, and that goes, I think, until like 2024 or something like that. When that bond expires, then we'll have some more infusion of Prop 13. But up until that point in time, these reserves are static. We're maintaining the district the operating reserve, and we're spending down the designated reserve, and there's no infusion.
Can you just give me those amounts? Because now that I was taking notes, but I see some of it's here. Can you tell me one more time? I think it was 190 in the first.
Yeah, 190. The second one was in your Zone 3, if you want to reference this later, in your Zone 3, 1617 budget book, page 8, I believe. So you can go back and reference that. Page 8. So the operating reserve is about $1.8 million, and that is about 50% of O&M costs.
Okay. And then
this third one is the 1.038.
Thank you. Okay, thank you for that.
And so the intent is to, I have a couple of questions here, but the intent is to take this to the Board of Supes with the tax recommend or with the committee's recommendation as soon as possible.
Yes. This is definitely all these changes, especially because we're adding a whole brand new capital project of that size, needs to go back to the Board of Supervisors for approval. So, we will be doing that as soon as we will be working on the board letter. Hopefully in a month we'll be able to get it on to the Board of Supervisors agenda.
Last meeting in October, first meeting in November.
Yes. Somewhere, yeah. that they're kind of busy right now, so I'm not sure if this is, I think we can do this as a consent agenda item, but if not, then we'll have to find some time on the board.
Right.
They're getting kind of filled up with items lately, I've heard. So.
Okay.
I have one question. I mean, I recognize the fact that this needs to happen to allow the plant to operate. But, you know, going forward, once we return to normal water quality, once it rains again and everything gets back to the way it used to be, will there be a benefit to this investment?
Yes. We've looked, that was one of the things that the consultant looked at, is our historical pH levels or the hardness of the water, and we've always bumped up against the ceiling, and then it's been sort of a zigzag, like it's hard and then it gets a little soft, and we've always bumped up against this level where we can just barely kind of keep moving forward without having to have this. It's basically adding another unit process onto the front end of the plant, and it's going to be it's like a water softening process, and so it will, over the long run, help us with all of the maintenance that we have, and you know, if we ever any other things that might come up that might adjust the hardness of the water, now we'll be operating at a nice, more of an even level, because we'll actually have a way to adjust and hold it at a particular hardness, as opposed to now where it spikes and then we would try to do something and then it goes down and then it goes up. So it'll be a lot more level, and I think that the equipment that we are currently seeing experiencing all kinds of problems, that it'll go a long ways to lengthening the life of the pumps and the strainers and all kinds of things. And it does have an effect ultimately even on that sixth rack, which we are holding off installing just for the reason that we have to get a handle on the hardness before we install any more equipment. So, but Josh was going to come up here and give you a little bit update.
Jeff had one more before you sneak away.
Actually, one more question. Thank you. On the spreadsheet with the fiscal year 16-17 on the top.
Yes.
So if I'm reading this correctly, most of the work that will be deferred gets pushed into the 17-18 fiscal year, anticipating that water quality returns to normal. Am I reading that correctly?
Yes. Everything that's actually listed in the 17-18 column is all up for discussion with TAC here shortly. We just sort of did this like, okay, let's assume that we're just going to move everything back a year because of this new project. But it can, all those things can also be reevaluated. And we usually get that from the input from TAC on what they deem to be what's the most important things to keep moving forward on. So
if it was, and this may be a longer range discussion, but if it was determined that at TAC and with plant operations that 50% of that 17-18 work could be deferred even an additional year to 17-18, mm-hmm. and the capital project budget goes down to $250,000 for 17-18, we would effectively be advancing our work program for next year into this year, in which case we would potentially be able to replenish the operating reserves.
Right. Yeah, you could, that, as Joanne was mentioning, that we target 550,000, and then what's the difference between that 550 and either more or less of what is chosen to be done? The remainder goes into this increase of agency reserves. So you can see down there we approved $48,000 going into agency reserves, and in order to help fund this new project, we're going to spend it.
Right, but I think as part of our budget discussions, for 17-18, we could see where the TAC lands on some of these deferred projects, and recoup some of the reserves in that fashion.
Yes. So the $48,000 that we're going to spend that would have gone into reserves, I suppose next year you could do $48,000. Less of work?
No, and maybe I'm confusing myself, but I mean, if we have a $550,000 capital investment,
uh-huh.
and we only budget $250,000 next year, uh-huh. because so then we would effectively be saving $300,000, which we're about to potentially allocate $250,000.
Mm-hmm.
So we just basically reduce our capital expenditures for 17-18 and effectively not remove money potentially, or we'd be able to, a way to refund or replenish the supplies in the district-funded operating reserves.
I'd have to defer that to Joanne as to whether that, if we can play that, move that money around like that.
Yeah, that's a little complicated. The district-funded reserves are the residual monies from Prop 13. So one thing that you could do is if you chose to still bill yourselves $550 but only spend $250, we would probably more recommend that you take that $250 and put it in the contractor-funded reserves. This is money that you're paying in. It's your money. Put it in the contractor reserves. District-funded reserves would not be infused, but the contractor-funded reserves would. It's still all available for future projects, but we'd want to keep your money isolated in the contractor reserves, which you could use in future years for another emergency or planning, you know. Yeah.
Definitely cleaner, but possibly part of our budget discussion.
Yeah, so that is an option.
Okay, great. Yeah. Thank you.
I just have a couple real quick questions, maybe for Jill. I remember when we replaced a lot of the membranes out at the plant, I guess about 4 years ago, and it was to, you know, increase the water quality, and it was needed most definitely, and that there were spare membranes bought and set to the side. So when we did blow one out or it didn't function to the highest ability, that they had spares there. Mm-hmm. And I did go out and tour the plant, and it was very fascinating. So my question is, is the water softener, for lack of the proper term, going to work? And is it going to work as the basin, you know, depletes? And then secondly is, are those membranes going to hold up to the 4,000 acre feet that we're going to go for at, when it really gets dry? My understanding is that it'll shut down at 4,000, right?
No, the reservoir gets down to minimum pool, which is 4,000 acre feet.
Right.
So we at that point, we will have to do a different mechanism to keep the plant probably running. There's different ways. They call it recirculating the water, because you don't really want to just turn the plant all the way off.
Right.
So we're also looking into what does that mean if we were to get to that stage. As far as the water hardness, there are, I can't, I would have to rely on Kennedy Jenks, the consultant who is devising this system to help soften the water. It's not brand new technology. Many other plants have similar technology to help soften their water. It was actually discussed as putting it in when we did the plant upgrades in 2007, but it's very expensive, as we're bringing to you now, and so it was deemed, no, we don't need to do it. So it's not a brand new technology. I believe it will work.
Okay.
I don't think that we would try. It's not experimental in any way.
Okay, and will there be an increase in chemicals or softeners or any of that should be considered?
Yes, and that is being considered. There are two options. One's sort of a CO2 gas, uh-huh, which is a material that's not as hazardous as, mm-hmm, using the acid that Ed brought up. So we are looking at that as the option that we would be more comfortable with installing.
So just as a guesstimate, how much do we think there'll be an increase in maintenance as far as, you know, the chemical needs or?
I don't have that information off the top of my head right now.
Right.
That is, it is outlined in the report that we just received from the consultant as far as cost to install, as well as the O&M. There will be increased chemical costs. But on the flip side, we can maybe go back to like some of the maintenance items we do, where we were doing them every 6 months. Maybe now we'll be able to do them once a year.
Okay.
And right now we're doing them every 2 weeks, so everything is, you know, it's a huge, it'll be a huge savings. I think the long-term solution is putting this whole unit process is not a really super quick fix.
Right.
It's going to take 6 to 8 months to probably implement this. So we are working on an immediate solution that we can probably do in the next month. And between that and the larger project, we believe that can all be handled with the $625,000.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I have one more question. Apologize. And I may get sideways glances as soon as I ask this question because it may impact your workload. Realizing that we're discussing this evening taking it out of operating reserves, and since this is effectively a direct impact to the drought, is there other funding sources available, either grants or whatnot, that can effectively help with the funding of these repairs?
I don't know the answer to that, but we can certainly look into it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hence the sideways glance that I knew was going to come.
And we'll be sending that grant application over to your office for. But that being said, you know, honestly, even if we were to get grant funding, I think you're all aware that that's not a fast process either. And so at this point, we're trying to, like, do everything on the fast track. So, but that's a good suggestion.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Jill.
Hey, Josh.
Josh, are you going to sneak up here, or we're going to keep asking questions? Jill spent all your time. You only have 3 minutes now. I just want you to know that. So
perfect. Joshua Roberts, County Public Works Utilities Division Capital Projects Manager. So kind of intertwined with this discussion is related to the capital projects that we have ongoing. So I guess I would start at the end. I'll work my way back to the beginning and say, and if you look at, start on page 20 of your packet, this is the list of capital projects in process. We're not proposing to stymie or stop any of the projects that are currently in process. The SCADA project, equipment replacement, the repairs to the spillway, all those projects are shown on your budget sheet, or the adjusted budget sheet, which is, I think it's page 22 of your packet. All those projects will continue through completion. The good news from those projects is on the summary that we provided to you in this memo, we were expecting, or we are anticipating, approximately $119,500. And we're calling that carry forward anticipated project savings. So from this list of projects on page 20 that we have underway at the time, we've tried to do a really good job of coming in under budget on those projects, and we're expecting about that $120,000 in savings. The majority of that's coming actually from the SCADA project, which is wrapping up hopefully here in the next few weeks. So that's kind of where those dollars are coming from. So all these projects that are listed, those won't be coming off your list. We'll continue to give you updates, and we expect to follow through with those. The second line item, under the proposed funding makeup, again, back to the list on page 19, project savings, which we're calling deferred to 17-18. That's again shown on this capital projects list of kind of gives you the breakdown of which projects we're proposing to defer. The boat access, the cathodic protection survey, the equipment storage design study. Some of those items that were recommended to us by both the water lab, operations, the chief plant operator, as projects that were not critical to operating the plant at this time. So that's kind of gives you a background on where some of those dollars came from. So in addition to the pH suppression, which has really been the main topic of tonight, there are actually two other projects which these funding adjustments will help to supplement, and the first being the membrane strainers. If you look back on your existing approved budgets, the membrane strainers were previously budgeted to be, there's three strainers, and the concept was let's replace one of those a year for the next 3 years. That's a pretty simple process. But as we've talked about, I think at the last time we were here, the sixth rack upgrade project, which is now on hold, is due primarily to pH, and the scaling is one issue. But the strainers are 10 years old, and they're just they're worn out. They're rusting out, and they're causing debris to flow downstream and clog up the membrane strainers. So we put the sixth rack project on hold, and we're now looking to fund, basically pre-fund the membrane strainer replacement project all in this year. So instead of three strainers over the next 3 years, we want to do three this year. So you see that line item that we're looking at additional funding of. So it's when we call it additional funding, that's not entirely the case. We're just rolling, kind of as Jeff had suggested in making these budget adjustments, we're rolling dollars from 17-18 and 18-19 forward to today to try to fund this repair project. And then the last one is the PLC upgrades. That was a project that had been funded in previous years. The dollars allocated were really to try to assess the needs of the PLCs. These are programmable logic controllers, and their primary objective is for state compliance. And presently, the system, because of its age and the ability of the computer system that's out there now, frankly, we're operating a little out of compliance. The state's giving us a pass. They know we're doing the best we can on our reporting, but we are technically out of step with this state's reporting requirements. So again, this is why we're asking to roll some dollars forward to this year and do some computer upgrades on the system. And just so happens that they're attached to the membrane racks, but this is somewhat unassociated with the debris issue that we're having. Any questions on projects that we're working on? Excellent.
Thank you.
Thanks. At this point, take any questions from the public on the proposed capital improvement program changes. Seeing none, we do want to take a vote on this item, correct?
Sounds like it. Are we making a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors?
Yeah, that's what I was kind of going with this. Is it's not coming back to the TAC at this
correct.
Point. Yeah.
We would need a vote on the budget adjustment, proposed budget adjustment.
Then I'll go ahead and
80,000, right?
I'll go ahead and make a motion that we support the proposed budget changes to be presented for final approval to the board.
Second. Do we need roll call vote on these?
Yes.
Member Lucy?
Yes.
Member Barnage?
Yes.
Member Hageman?
Yes.
Chairman Hagan? Member Talley?
Yes.
Member Waggy?
Yes.
And Member Lee?
Yes.
Thank you, Jill. And Josh. All righty, so we have no item 7, no action items that don't require subsequent supervisor's action, but we do have two items in number 8 that the Board of Supes do have subsequent action. A couple of, one annexation request and an easement request.
Yes, and I'll be presenting Mr. Weldon's annexation request.
So am I. I was going to get some coffee, too.
A 90-second break, huh? Andrew, you have to tell jokes until everybody comes back.
You have this in a PowerPoint? This is a PDF, right?
Right. I don't have it in PowerPoint.
A tour.
We could go off of printed copies if we need to.
Yeah, we've all got it.
Okay.
About copies.
There we go.
They go to his trash can first.
Oh, there you go.
Thank you.
He's dragging it in.
Okay, thank you. So, Andrea Montes, County Public Works Utilities Division Program Manager, and tonight I will be presenting to you an annexation request for CSA 12. The applicant is Mr. Art Weldon. He is joining us this evening, and he'll be available to ask questions and answer questions following my presentation. So, in June of this year, Public Works received an annexation request from Mr. Art Weldon, and last year he purchased a property in CSA 12. And we're looking at that property right now. It's one legal parcel. Let's see. Okay, so one legal parcel, but it has two APN numbers. One of the APNs resides within CSA 12 and the other does not. So when Mr. Weldon came to County Planning and Building and talked about subdividing his property, they sent him down the hall in the Public Works to get a will serve letter. So that's a letter that says that the district is willing and able to provide water to that property. When he came down to us, we couldn't do that because his request was to subdivide the property, and he wanted the parcel that does not belong, that is not within CSA 12 right now. He wanted water to go to that, and he wanted to be able to sell some of the CSA 12 water with that parcel. So in order for him to move forward with this process, he would need to have the parcel that's outside of the CSA 12 boundary annexed into the CSA 12 boundary. So we took this item to the TAC a few weeks ago, and I asked the TAC for feedback. They didn't have to make recommendations. It was just an informational item. Some of the members thought that this might set a precedence for future annexation requests into CSA 12, while other members didn't think it had anything to do with the Zone 3. So the group did not make a recommendation either way, and they're just individual members that spoke in regards to the item. So I'm here tonight to inform you of Mr. Weldon's request and to ask for your feedback. I will be taking this request to the Board of Supervisors, and I will be letting them know what your feedback is or recommendation. So once I take it to the Board of Supervisors, if the Board of Supervisors approves the annexation, that will allow Public Works to issue a conditional intent to serve will serve letter to Mr. Weldon, and then he'll be able to move forward with the planning process through the County Planning and Building Department. Can I answer any questions for you?
Questions from the committee, Jeff?
A quick question. Is this subject to LAFCO?
LAFCO was the one who drew this line through the single parcel many years ago. At the time, I guess it was a common practice, but it really had more to do with property tax lines. And it does have to go through LAFCO. I don't know if that will be an issue. Mr. Weldon could probably speak to that in regards to the conversations he's had directly with LAFCO. I haven't had those questions. I mean, I haven't had those conversations with LAFCO. But yes, it does have to go through LAFCO, but it needs to go through the district first.
And does this change any water quantities? I mean, I think I understood that it's not going to change
it's
any.
It's not going to change the water quantity. In fact, the former owners of this property were allocated 6 acre feet of CSA 12 water, and Mr. Weldon is not requesting any more than 6 acre feet of water. He just wishes to be able to use it on other areas within that single parcel and to be able to sell some of that water when he subdivides the property, give about an acre foot with that property that he wants to sell.
And would the sale be within the county of San Luis Obispo?
I don't. You mean to another owner who resides within?
Well, when you sell something, you sell it. So mm-hmm. Are you selling it to somebody within the county, or are you selling it outside?
He would be selling it to the person who purchases the property. The water would stay with that property. So within within the county of San Luis Obispo.
Yeah, so that would be in the county.
Mm-hmm.
Just wanted to make sure it wasn't going in a truck and heading some other place.
Any other? Ed?
Yeah, just a couple comments. Number one, since I'm a member of LAFCO, I'm certain it would have to go to LAFCO because you're changing the district boundary in effect, correct?
Right, correct.
And
that is correct.
Basically, you're changing the boundary, which would have to go through LAFCO.
That is correct.
And 1 acre feet is about one residence, basically. How would that? How much water is 1 acre feet for a household, for example?
I think it's about a household of four.
Parcel, the
one
parcel, or is not parcel lot. I can build two homes.
As I recall, about 1 acre foot is basically a household use, correct?
One house.
Yes, it is.
From general calculation,
yes.
Maybe a little bit more than one household. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about one household using that water and perhaps going to. To Mary's point, we could require that water be used for that purpose only and not leave that property for other purposes?
We do have contracts in place with the property owners, and the water per contracts is to stay within CSA 12 and within Zone 3.
Okay, so the county can put that condition on it?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions for me?
Maybe just a comment to help mm-hmm. in my brain to put some boundaries on this. So there's the piece that abuts Ontario Road with a little triangle that's carved out of it, mm-hmm. and then the line that parallels the red line that parallels Highway 1. If the owner wanted to keep all 6 acre feet on that, on that. Not that piece, but the
around it.
The rectangle there. Okay. That is within CSA 12, and we would have no issue.
Correct.
There'd
correct.
Be no request.
There would be,
mm-hmm. But the owner wants to, so LAFCO, for whatever reason, put that line there, and that line then is now outside of CSA 12.
That's correct. And just for a frame of reference, that is along Ontario Road, along Highway 101, and that. It's kind of like we call it an island. That's the Hillcrest Mobile Home Park. So that is that rectangle that you see within Mr. Weldon's property that's within CSA 12 boundaries.
That is within CSA 12. They have a water entitlement or subcontract.
Yes. So if he just wanted to, he could do whatever he wants with the water right there on that property, but he wishes to subdivide his property and be able to use the water further up the property.
And you gave a couple of options, annex Mr. Weldon's land outside of CSA 12 into Zone 3 as well as CSA 12, which, as we've said, would require a LAFCO action as well,
mm-hmm.
Or supportive out-of-zone delivery of Zone 3 water to the L-shaped piece in the back.
Yes, with the land.
Those two options.
Either way, the land needs to be annexed into CSA 12, and it will require LAFCO's approval of that.
Oh, either way. Okay.
Either way. Mm-hmm.
And I guess there's a third option, not to support it, and then...
That could be an option.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Weldon could use the 6 acre feet inside of that, whatever we want to call that, a piece of property with a rectangle carved out, and then whatever happens in the back, which he would... likely put a well in, I would assume, if you wanted to develop that piece.
So, Brad, perhaps you can help me. So it's the rectangle that's in CSA 12. It's not the L piece that's in, I mean, it's just that, just the mobile home park is currently in CSA 12.
No, as well as the piece that surrounds the rectangle is okay. Also in CSA 12. It's the big L. That's not in CSA
right.
12.
Okay. So that rectangle shape that you're referring to, Jeff, is the mobile home park.
Mm-hmm.
The area surrounding that rectangle is within CSA 12. That's Mr. Weldon's property. And then that large L shape above that is Mr. Weldon's property, but outside of CSA 12.
And so the request is to have 1 acre foot but a very small quantity of water be available for that 161 acres.
That is, for the purposes of Zone 3 and CSA 12 water, that is the request, is to be able to use CSA 12 water on the part that's outside, approximately 2 acre feet, and the part that's outside of currently outside of CSA 12.
And how does that parcel get water now, or is there no water uses? Mr.
Weldon can probably speak to that, but I can tell you that I monitor water usage in CSA 12, and although he has 6 feet allocated to that property, he hasn't used nearly that, not even close.
That's okay. We haven't used all our water either. So I'm clear, is the smaller box at the bottom inside the other box is already CS 12, right?
Yes, that's CSA 12.
And then the other larger one, which is, 177 acres?
161.
161. He wants to annex that into 12.
Correct. So that line for CSA 12 ends right above that rectangle. That's the line. That's the boundary for CSA 12. And you might be aware that this area right here isn't really anywhere near the rest of the CSA 12 system. This is at the very end of that system. It was annexed years ago towards the beginning of the project.
Yeah, I think the trailer park is probably the end of the line.
That is the end of the line, yes. Yeah.
So in terms of precedent for the committee's recommendation anyway, is there something else out there that someone else would look at and say, I want to do the same thing that would be potentially detrimental?
Well, I can say that we are fully allocated right now with CSA 12 water, so there's not any water that the district could sell to anybody.
We are fully allocated?
Yes.
Yeah. So it would be somebody inside that might have a similar underutilized water to annex something in, right?
I just another question, too. All the property owners within our Zone 3 are paying toward Lopez Lake. Is that correct? All the ones that get our water?
Yes.
And this property is outside, so it's not currently, there's no history of paying taxes for the water, the Lopez Dam.
I can't speak to that. That would be something that I'd have to look into.
But that's my assumption.
That's your assumption,
it's outside
okay.
the district. Mm-hmm. They would not be paying any. There's no history of paying property tax toward paying down, for example, the bond that was discussed earlier.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So I guess my point is, if we were to move forward, it seems like there would be a substantial amount of money required to buy into the system. I'm not advocating necessarily that, but it seemed like that might be an issue.
No. Jill Ogren, Public Works. They've been paying for the 6 acre feet. That 6 acre feet and the cost for that water includes all the infrastructure, all the Zone 3 costs, just like anybody on the Zone 3 system. And because he's not asking to buy more than 6 acre feet, he's already paid all the costs. That's built into the cost of that 6 acre feet.
Okay, so I guess property tax are allocated based upon the amount that you use then.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, you buy a set amount whether you use it. It's not based on usage. It's you're just paying whether you take the water or not. You've bought that. So the fact that he's been.
Yeah. I understand now. Okay, thank you.
And then, of course, he would be responsible for the cost of the infrastructure to his property to get the water there.
To move the water back.
Correct.
Yeah.
But as Jill said, he's not asking for any more water than he already has and that he's been paying for. Any further questions for me?
Does staff have a recommendation for the committee as far as the...
We do not have a recommendation. Okay. Our job is to bring it to you and take it to the Board of Supervisors.
But if you had some, you don't see anything necessarily detrimental to the Zone 3 or CSA 12.
He's not asking for any more water.
Yeah. And these two pieces of property, even though they have two APN numbers, have always been one piece of property?
That's correct.
Yeah. But, of course, he's just planning on, you know, subdividing. But, again, it's with 6 acre feet of water, just moving it around on those existing 177 acres. Mr. Weldon, please. Yeah, please.
Yes. I just don't want my house right by the road. So there's two. With that much acreage, you can build two homes and a granny unit. And all I'm trying to do is build two homes away from the road. So it's 1 acre foot per home. You know, I'm subdividing, it's what they call it. I'm really just doing a lot. To me, I'm just splitting off 80 acres with one house allowed. And that's it. So each 80 acres is not going to get two houses allowed plus the granny unit. It's only going to get one house.
Is the minimum lot size 80 acres up there?
From
the planning?
Yeah. I don't believe so. I think for the slope, for the steepness, because it's very steep back there. The water's not going way in the back. It's only going beyond your line, you know, part way.
Oh, literally, okay.
Well, maybe halfway up the one side there, but it's so steep you can't hardly get back there. It's hiking area. I'm not trying to build apartments or a whole big water usage thing. There's just two homes just beyond the existing barrier. It is one legal lot, which I thought was so weird. I have water to my front yard, but I don't have water to my backyard.
Right.
That's basically what it means to me.
That is.
And I want to build my house on the back of my lot, not the front of my lot. That's what it kind of boils down to.
And then I think you mentioned, or maybe in the staff report mentioned, so you've got 1 acre foot approximately for a house, and you've got entitlements to six.
Right. So we've been paying for six and not using any.
You have 4 acre feet to
for some
ag or whatever, right.
I don't use near an acre foot, honestly. My family, I could probably show water records from our last house, which will be roughly the same size as what we want to build. So we're very conservative, and we're not going to have yard because the landscape's natural back. The further away you get from the street, the less you want to mess with the landscape. You know, does that make sense? I mean, if you're up in the oaks, you don't want to put a lawn out there. I don't. Anyway, I think that's.
Committee members have any questions for Mr. Weldon?
So it sounds like you just basically want to. And I guess I'm surprised as a member of LAFCO, generally we try to draw boundaries that include entire parcels rather than break up
parcels.
I'm quite
surprised myself.
So
I thought I could build my house.
I guess I'm just surprised,
but
then I'm surprised by a lot of things that happen.
And I don't even think it's actually. Is it actually on the APN? The two APNs? Because I thought it was actually slightly above on that L cutting across. The way it's what the maps I saw, it didn't go on the APN line. It was actually partly on the other APN where I want to put the house.
The CSA 12 boundary.
Yeah. But I don't know.
Could you help me out? Could you go over the map and describe which area where you want to build, which lots? The lot closest to Ontario Road is the one that's in the district.
This horseshoe shape and this is all one legal lot.
Right.
And what I'm trying to do is draw a line like over here, come down, and then so there will be one house in this area because this is the only buildable area. But I have to maintain 80 acres. If I drew a line right here, this would be 80 acres. So I have to start this line over here so I have enough room over here to build the house. So that's what I want to try to sell to help support my driveway and all this infrastructure I need for my house. And I want my house somewhere in this area, just a little further. There's a ravine in between, so it's a lot of privacy, but it's I don't know. Yeah, so one house would be in this area, and my house would be in this area. And all the water, from what I understood, the line was somewhere in here.
The CSA 12 line.
For what? If it matters.
And what's on the backside of the...
This is several hills and ravines, and it's not buildable. You can't get back there with a road.
So the back lot, you can't, the back line,
no,
the one far right.
So we're trying to do one building side of it.
I'm going to have to ask you to use the mic while we're trying to record this. It's just kind of...
Please.
I'll get it.
Now you're fine.
I don't know. I guess the buildable or the building envelopes is what they call it. So there's going to be like a 4-acre building envelope that's going to be attached to the part we're going to sell, which we're only going to allow one home to be built there, so they can't do several homes, which would use more water. And we're going to allocate 1 acre foot to that parcel, which I doubt they would use too, to be honest with you. And then my house would be up a little further on the left, and it's the building envelope's like 1 acre or something. It's on a steep hillside. So I'm trying to save some space at the very bottom, which will be a building envelope for a barn or something else, but it's already in the district.
So would you end up with three lots then up there?
No, it's going to be two lots.
Two lots.
But my lot, I'll have two building envelopes.
Gotcha.
And then
Your lot will retain the road.
Right. Front. I'm going to remain the whole driveway and the whole bottom.
Yeah.
So, are we expected to make some kind of recommendation to the Board of Supervisors?
I think that's what staff is looking for, and it could be, I guess, in the form of one of the two requested actions on page 24 or something in between.
Well, I guess, I mean, I don't have a problem with this. I mean, it sounds like it's, I mean, I totally understand what you're trying to do, but this sounds like a land use planning kind of issue, and I don't remember ever in Zone 3 dealing with this kind of issue before, and I feel like it's sort of out of our area of expertise, and I think that's why people are really struggling with this. So maybe my motion is that we're not going to object to this, but we feel like it's sort of beyond our purview or outside of our area of expertise.
So I understand that, and what we could
maybe
do...
Maybe somebody smart like Ed Waggy could craft what I just said into a cogent motion.
Basically, if the Board of Supervisors approves the annexation request, then we would just give them a conditional intent to serve water. It doesn't mean we're serving water to that area right now outside of CSA 12, but it allows him to move forward with the planning process, and like you said, then planning and building could further discuss the land use issue. He can't do that right now.
I have some comments. So I understand what you're trying to do. I had a discussion with Director English, and we have some reservations about this annexation that sets a precedent. And so unless there's more information that I'm not thinking of, it makes me a little uncomfortable when we're in this this crisis of this water crisis, and so I'm not comfortable moving forward. You know, if Zone 3 wants to make a different recommendation, you know, I can understand that because I do, you know, understand it from your point of view. But those are just my comments right now.
Well, as Ed mentioned earlier, it's kind of odd that the whole thing wasn't in there in the first place. It should have been.
And I understand that, but. It does set a precedent going forward.
For repairing a map that was drawn
wrong?
Well,
we don't really repair maps. That's not us.
Or I don't know what you call it, but to me.
Well, if I could add my two cents, too, about I am concerned about a precedent, so I guess I would ask staff, is there any other evidence of anything else where we've got this kind of a odd duck, if you will, where a portion of a parcel was within and other portions without the district? For the zone?
As I've been told, this was a common practice by LAPCO in the 70s.
Oh.
I don't know if this type of request coming to the district, CSA 12, in the past. However, we do get annexation requests in other county service areas throughout
the county. And I'm sorry, this isn't working, but so, you know, requesting to annex land into a county service area is not something that's uncommon, but as far as that type of request, this type of request coming to the district, I don't know if we've done that before.
Yeah, I was surprised to see it on here too, since you know, we deal with other issues advising the county on things like operation of the plant and so forth and spending money, but definitely a land use issue. And I guess insofar as we're not increasing the amount of water that's already right, out there.
I already have it.
It's, just it's already been designated. And I just am concerned about that precedent issue. I don't want to, you know, start a whole bunch of these kinds of things. If there's a whole bunch more properties out there, is it going to be ultimately a larger impact on the supply of water? Because
it is
because we're not all using our total allocation right now. Are we going to encourage additional people to use more than are currently allocated because of this?
So I'm already allocated way more than I'm using.
Right.
And I'm not asking for any more. All I'm asking is I move it further back on my lot. It's one legal lot that has the water in the front. The pipeline's on my property. So that's kind of weird.
Well, I guess I kind of agree with Brian. I'm not sure I can endorse it, but on the other hand, I'm not sure I want to stand in the way of it because it seems like it's kind of beyond what we normally do, and ultimately the county will have to decide and LAFCO later on, but I guess I'm looking for a little more information about the history of it or something, which LAFCO would certainly
when I talked to LAFCO, they had no issue with it at all. They said as long as Public Works was willing to support it, they would
process it.
Yeah.
And LAFCO would send letters stating that? Because you're right, that it is common for them to have islands in the day, let's just
right.
say, you know. What makes me uncomfortable is it increases the CSD 12. It increases it by 177 acres. So if...
Is it based on acres, though?
And
or square miles? Or?
Well, it increases the area by 177 acres, whether it's, you know, water or not. You know,
but it's not increasing the water.
That's...
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's other concerns. But, you know, I would... If that was my property, I would, one, be having a fit. I think you're very calm. And
I did have a fit. I'm not proud of that.
But two, I would make the county fix it. And I would go to LAFCO and make them fix it. You shouldn't have to fight, you know, to fight to get both your parcels in one area. But it is going to increase CSD 12 by 170-some acres.
161, I think.
And so maybe you could compromise with the county and say, look, do a lot line adjustment so it's not so much, but it's still not going to get over other issues. I don't know.
I'm going to make a motion that we have no recommendation.
I'll second that.
So we've got
a
motion by Commissioner Talley, seconded by Commissioner Lewis, that we simply make no recommendation
right.
on this item.
That was very eloquent.
Yeah.
Well, I was hoping you were going to help me out.
That helps.
Okay, we'll do a roll call.
Well, let's any other board comment on the motion? We have not asked for any public comment at this point, so I would entertain any public comment on the issue or further staff comment.
I just want to clarify. I kind of heard what Kristen, Member Varnick was saying, as well as Member Waggy. And from as Andrea mentioned, the water supply at CSA 12 is fully allocated. Their CSA 12 has 337 acre feet. That's a set amount, and if somebody who's already getting water in that wanted to buy water from another one, it doesn't change the 337. It's how you chop it all up and who uses it. So he has 6 acre feet, and if he didn't use all his 6 acre feet and he wanted to sell off 4 acre feet to somebody else in CSA 12, he could. It doesn't change him the... Him adding on that property, it doesn't affect the quantity of water. But it does, as you said, it will increase the size of CSA 12 by 177 acres. But it doesn't change the quantity of water available.
So, to staff on this motion, would if the board or the committee approved that motion, voted to approve that, would that give you enough to go to the next step for Mr. Weldon. I hate to put him in the middle of our conundrum in terms of if he needs a thumbs up or thumbs down. It seems like I don't want to have him chasing around.
The next step would be to go to the Board of Supervisors, whether we have a recommendation from the Zone 3 Advisory Committee or not. We would include that in the staff report.
Perfect.
That we've taken it both to the TAC and the Zone 3 Advisory Committee. But you don't need to make a recommendation for us to move forward to the Board of Supervisors.
Good.
So prior to voting, can I ask staff a question? Can I ask Jill a question?
Please. So
if we were to not support this annexation effectively, where would this parcel get water? Or how would this parcel get water?
It has 6 acre feet.
That parcel does not have 6 acre feet.
Because
he is not in zone 3.
Part of the parcel does.
The back 160 acres is not serviced by zone
Correct.
3. And where does it get water?
That would be up to him on how he figures that out, but it does not get CSA 12 water.
Okay.
So that 6 acre feet that he has would have to be used on property that he currently owns within CSA 12.
So I think effectively I've been confused, and that's probably not unusual. But I think what my confusion is if we were to support an action, we would say zone 3 is going to move water outside of its current boundaries into 161 acres of an area that's not currently serviced by this boundary. If we take no action, then we're leaving it to either LAFCO or the board or someone else to say, we are allowing you to move zone 3 water into an area that's outside our current boundaries. And so I don't know if I'm comfortable moving forward with that based upon the information we have this evening. So I think I might be okay going towards a no recommended or not a no recommendation. But we are, I mean, if we support it, then we're allowing water to move outside zone 3 boundaries.
Or I think we're leaving it up to the Board of Supervisors to decide.
If we take no action.
If we take no action.
And what is the motion on the table right now?
The motion on the table is to take no action. Provide no recommendation, no recommendation to the Board of Supes.
Right. Yeah. So I have another question. So if we take no action, are you able to give our feedback? Because I would possibly be in favor for that motion, but I have reservations because we're, you know, as Jeff stated, we're the water is moving outside of zone 3 and it's a really big piece of property. So if the next person wants to come in and do this and they said, well, he got to do it, and I mean, it's the precedent setting always concerns me. And is there a well on the property?
And again, I probably misspoke in terms of taking no action. Committee Member Talley's motion is to provide no recommendation to the Board of Supes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think to me that's different than no action. We are taking an action. We're purposely punting it to the Board
Letting
of Supes.
Letting the Board of Supervisors, that's understood.
Yeah.
Yes. So Kristen, to your question, I would include this discussion in the staff report to the Board of Supervisors.
Okay.
Just as I included the tax
right.
Feedback in the staff report.
Okay. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
So going back to the possibly discussion, if we didn't take an action tonight and perhaps continued it and allowed staff to work with LAFCO to say, we realize this is one contiguous parcel, although it has two APNs, if they were to come forward with a letter or an email or some level of communication that says the reasoning behind why they excluded this portion of the parcel from CSA 12 or Zone 3, I might be more comfortable making a recommendation.
So
basically continuing it. Mm-hmm. And I guess from your standpoint, which is, do you have a preference?
I don't know. I'm just amazed. The whole process amazes me. I can't expect a PVC pipe up there above my house.
Well, at this point, I mean, you know, we've got a motion on the table. We've had discussion. Why don't we have a vote?
I agree. I was going to bring it to a vote if we've discussed the committee members' concerns. So, again, to repeat the motion on the table by Commission Talley and seconded by Commissioner Lucy, is to provide no recommendation to the Board of Supervisors.
Correct.
So we have a roll call vote, please.
Member Lucy?
Why do you always start with me?
Because you're closest to me.
Yes.
Member Barnidge?
Yes.
Member Talley?
Yes.
Member Waggy?
Yes.
Member Lee?
Yes.
And Chairman Hagman?
Yes.
Good luck.
Okay.
Make laugh, so do the right thing.
And I guess I'll see you on the second round if it comes that far through the county.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so if you thought that one was easy, now we have a another land use issue. Yeah, this is a an easement request, and Joshua's going to handle this one.
It's coming up.
It's so much easier, Josh, just to say yes or no for money. These things are,
yeah,
these land use things.
I know. I just asked for a lot of money, and that was so simple. Joshua Roberts, County Public Works Utilities Division. So hopefully to make this simpler for you at the end, let me start with just giving you some feedback on what type of action that the committee could take tonight. I suppose you could take the action that you just took. I could add that as a fourth item. You could take action to make no recommendation. That was not the one I was thinking of, though. So the three ways that the committee could take action tonight are, first, you could support the process moving forward. You could make a motion to not support the process moving forward, or you could ask that the item would be continued, which isn't ostensibly a non-support, but you could ask for a continuance and come back with more information or clarifications or some changes in the project description. So let's start with there, and then I'll go through my presentation. So hopefully that helps to see what we're looking for. Specifically, though, Public Works staff is requesting input from the advisory committee. So not in addition to making a motion, we would like to hear your feedback. We think this is critical. So we would like to have input from the advisory committee related to a request from Carlos Castaneda. He's the applicant to be granted an easement through District Zone 3 property out near Lake Lopez. And this is to access a historically landlocked parcel. Mr. Castaneda is here tonight, along with his representative, Carol Florence, and I would invite them afterwards if they'd like to make a presentation and, of course, answer any questions. I'm here to answer questions also. This item was presented to the Zone 3 Technical Advisory Committee on August the 11th. Their primary considerations are the project's potential impacts to the watershed, water quality, operations of the system, and any compliance with any regulatory requirements. And I'll just reiterate that not only is that the position of the TAC, staff has the same feelings. We don't have a recommendation either way, but staff just shares the same concerns that that the project would be mindful of those items: watershed, water quality, operations, and compliance with regulatory requirements. So the map I have up here on the wall, the parcel in question, the PIQ, is outlined here in red. It lies south of District 3 property off of Lopez Drive and is in the vicinity of Chantrell Lane, and I'll get to that in just a moment. It is bounded along the north by Zone 3, but is bound on all other sides by private properties. The staff has looked into this item, and we've determined that the project or the parcel's landlocked disposition or its nature was not a result of and predates the creation of Lopez. Staff is additionally unaware of either existing or the applicant's pursuit of agreements in favor of the parcel through other private properties. essentially to say that property is inaccessible either through adjoining neighbors or through Zone 3. We don't have any records of that. The parcel itself is about 335 acres. It is undeveloped. It's actually made up of two APN numbers. It's zoned rural land. It is located with what is known as the Lopez Lake Sensitive Resource Area. It's an SRA. And the reason for that designation is primarily because the property is entirely within the watershed of the lake. And portions of the property are also within the viewshed. And these are items that were created in the land use element as a part of the Lopez 2000 plan. In addition, we reviewed county GIS documents. GIS shows that the property exceeds 50% slope on average. Additionally, there's no evidence of historic active uses such as farming, grazing, agriculture. The property is primarily characterized by steep terrain and is covered almost entirely in brush and woodland. And if we can go to the next slide, if I can get this to work. There we go. All right. So the map that's up here now is a blow-up of the property and its adjacency to Lopez Drive in yellow at the top. The lake sits just beyond that and actually seasonally extends down into what is known as Clatbird Canyon. That's kind of this lower – well, the pointer doesn't work, so it kind of does it. So that's that kind of like lower leg that sticks down here to the right with that big label Chanterelle on it. So Chanterelle Lane is an existing private easement that starts at Lopez Drive. It's shown in dashed yellow and kind of winds its way down through Zone 3. Zone 3 property, district property, is shown all in green. That's all the Zone 3 property. So you can see, again, it abuts Zone 3 to the north. So there's a proposed easement actually consists of what I'm calling it two segments. The first segment follows existing chanterelle. You can see it, the orange line overlies the yellow dash line. And that extends for about 1,000 feet along the existing roadway that's there. The second piece, which is kind of where the arrow is pointing, is a new easement that's proposed to be located through Zone 3 property and then terminating along the northerly property line of the subject parcel. Chanterelle's existing easement through Zone 3 property, serving properties to the south within Clatbird Canyon. Go to the next slide. Okay, shown here in red is that easement that we're talking about. This is existing roadway that's already in Zone 3. This is a portion of Chanterelle Lane. What is being proposed or conceptually proposed are a couple of various options for extension of this easement. Okay, good, that worked. So the first is, we'll call it option A, or I think it's called alternative one. Alternative one would be to follow Chanterelle Lane and then divert from it, climbing the hillside, and again terminating at the northerly property line. This route was examined to be the I think probably was the shortest route getting there that was kind of a reasonable grade. In conversation with the applicant, we suggested that maybe they come up with a route that's, you know, less intrusive on the woodland. That's shown here in green. This is alternative two. This route is about 500 feet longer, but again, St. Terminus breaks away from Chanterelle, but it takes a more northerly route, less goes through less woodland, but it's a longer route. So, so the purpose of the easement and its intended use of the parcel is still in development, so to speak. This is the request here tonight is a very early phases of the applicant exploring their options for the property. Number one, they have to have access. And unless they have some kind of an idea about their ability to gain access to the property, I think they're just honestly not terribly interested in a lot of expenditures going through the planning development process, et cetera. But these routes that I'm showing you, the first and second alternatives, those are based on CAL FIRE standards for a 16% maximum running slope. The easement that's here had an accompanying easement, basically with no photograph in the background. Details such as the cross-section and some of the constructability items, we're not even at that point in the process yet to have information on that. So that's just a little bit about the easement. If you don't mind, if you have questions on that part of it, I'll take them now, because I'm going to kind of shift the discussion into a little bit of background regarding easements, where Chanterelle Lane came from, Zone 3. So if there's specifics about the easement or what's being requested, I can take those now. If you think of them later, that's fine too.
Just one question with regards to the easement width, and realizing that this has the potential to go through planning processes and so forth, is the easement that they're requesting for a driveway access? Because a 50 feet wide for a subdivision access is probably not going to fit within that for CAL FIRE, for what or for what the planning department standards would be for an actual road to get back into that. So,
sure, I guess I would direct that to the applicant. They probably took cues. The existing easement is 50 feet wide, so I think they're following that from a constructability perspective. You know, if you're looking at walls or slope grading, et cetera. Okay. So. Again, this is a concept that's coming before the committee. It's the concept of this is an unprecedented a potentially precedent setting item. So it's really the idea that they're asking to get from point A to point B via an easement. It's going to take going cross country through, you know, using a portion of an existing road. Portions that would have to be new road or path or whatever the ultimate development ends up being. So the ultimate disposition of the easement, I think, is something that would be worked out either in the planning process and or through limitations on the agreement, which I'm gonna get to that towards the latter part of the presentation.
Okay, so perhaps my next question is a little bit anticipatory. But since the landowner, it appears, is SLO County Public Works, so what's, and you're not coming forward with a recommendation here this evening, so what benefit is our input for Public Works? Because you can grant the easement with or without our approval.
Yes, that is true. The next hurdle is working with County Council to develop the agreement. And... given the choices of no action or coming back with questions or supporting moving forward, those are fairly straightforward. County Council, I think, can move forward with authority to work with the applicant. If the committee is not supportive, we would probably have to have a different discussion with County Council and staff to determine the viability of an agreement moving forward without the support of the Zone 3 Advisory Committee. More than likely, the board is going to take action based on an affirmation by Zone 3. So it's going to be difficult to convince County Council to expend time and money on an item that is going to be denied or an agreement that can never be reached.
Well, but I guess it goes back to kind of what Brian was saying earlier is, or maybe it was Ed. So this feels more like a land use discussion versus our ability to grant rights to be able to use a roadway. I mean, I don't see that is really in our purview.
That is correct. This ultimately will become a land use issue. So I think, for simplicity's sake, and I've had to go through this mind bending also. Today we're all representatives of a private landowner, where Mr. Castaneda's neighbor. just so happens we're also working for the district. Who is the landowner? And so the neighbor has come and said, hey, I would like to put a road through your property. What do you think about that? That's the question that's before you. I want to put a road through your property. What do you think about that? That's the first item. We're asking for feedback. And then for the item to move to the next step, which is, and I'll get into that. I'm talking more about the technicalities of the easement at this point.
And I guess I go back to the question is, do we have land use rights and authority? I don't recall that we do.
The Board of Supervisors is
right.
Would make that.
So if I could, and the TAC kind of had the same conundrum, why do we care? I mean, just to put it bluntly. And to me, the way it made sense is I care because will the road negatively impact the water quality in the lake? Because that's kind of what we're about.
Right.
And so in my mind anyway, and Josh, correct me if I'm wrong, that's sort of where the TAC went and maybe the advisory committee as well, trying to figure out what's our role here. It's not to we don't have the authority to approve or disapprove the actual easement, but rather consider these things, Mr. and Mrs. Board of Supervisors, as you deliberate on approving the easement.
And actually, this is not even this item will result. Could result in ultimate board action. However, the next step is actually not the board. The next step is drafting of the agreement. And so we might be back here a couple more times looking for advisory committee support of the agreement. That's the next baby step in that.
Yeah, I think that was my concern too. It wasn't, we don't make land use decisions, but we certainly make watershed, if it's going to affect our watershed, it could affect our water quality.
And the agreement,
looks like the proposed, I assume it passes over a creek a couple times, looks like here.
Yeah, at least
so,
once.
So that raises another question by itself. And if there's additional land use in the future because of it, that could also affect water runoff and lots of things. So I guess that's where I'm coming from, the same direction as the TAC, I think. And that's my only concern, is what's the effect on our water supply and water quality. And I guess I would base my decision on that.
Sure. And that's actually not known at this time. It's how the infancy level of the process is just looking for some support. The applicant's looking for support to move forward, to put together, work with county council, put an agreement together. That agreement in its draft form would be subject to the review of the advisory committee. And most likely what county council would be looking for, and again, we're probably going too far ahead in the discussion, but what county council would be looking for from the advisory committee and probably the TAC would be related specifically to those items. What types of provisos as the landowner are you looking for in this agreement to protect your interests? Such as the watershed and water quality, et cetera.
And this is property owned by the district, technically, not the county.
Correct. So this is where it gets funky because it's owned by the district.
It's not directly owned by the county. It's the county board supervisor acting the flood control district.
Yes, the county board of supervisors would be acting on behalf of the district. And then through the land use process, the planning commission would be acting on behalf of the county related to the, regulatory.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple questions.
You bet.
Okay. So we have 335 acre-feet out in the wilderness that is covered supposedly in scrub brush and trees, right?
Yeah.
And that historically it hasn't had any farming, grazing, or agriculture.
Not that we're aware.
And it's pretty steep and hilly back there. And so we have somebody asking to put a driveway out into the middle of the woods, right?
That would be the appearance.
Okay, so I'm sorry. You know, as you get older, I don't know if you get more suspicious or you just wise up or what's going on, but anybody came to me and said, hey, I want to put a driveway in the middle of the forest, right? Coming from Mendocino County, I'd say, oh, what are you going to do back in that forest? you know. So, which is fine. I'm fine with that as long as it doesn't touch my water.
Sure.
Because there's been too many creeks, too many streams, and Lopez has been tapped into for green leafy plants, which it's fine. You know, I don't have any issues with that. What I have issues with is tapping into the lake, tapping into the watershed. You know, it's too close to the water for my comfort level. The last easement we did, it wasn't anywhere near our watershed. It was over in 12. You know, this one is on top of our, it's geographically, it's so close to the lake, it almost scares me. You know, so in my mind, I've been back in those hills, and, you know, granted, there's lots of things that have grown back in those hills, but we're in a drought, and we have to prioritize our water. So I have to say is, why would somebody want to put it in a very, very expensive driveway out into the middle of the forest? I mean, I would, but, you know.
Yeah, and I think those are issues that would be explored far more in depth.
I think you should explore them now.
Yeah, okay.
We do have an initiative on the ballot in November.
Yeah, that is the kind of feedback that we're looking for is
what type of slap for those comments. Everybody usually hangs their head and shakes.
Yeah, well, let me give a time for everyone to kind of contemplate on those things more, Jeff. Thank you. I want to kind of move back and just give you the brief history of time related to Chantrell Lane and kind of some of the development of the lake. So when the reservoir was envisioned and when construction was started and all these impacts started coming down, the Lopez Reservoir actively understood the adverse effects of developing that property that it would have on other adjacent landowners. So, you know, beyond, you know, whatever ecological impacts they had in the 1960s and 70s, they also recognized adverse impacts to land use. So the board action that's of record, and even actually the funding mechanism, which was the Davis-Grunsky Act, those were specific to reconciling access, and as a matter of fact, we're specific about not creating any kind of net increase in legal access to parcels. So there's this term replacement easements that's used throughout the historical documents, and so the board action was specifically limited to mitigation of loss of legal access through what they called replacement easements. Chantrell Lane, we had the previous slide up. I don't think I got too far ahead there, sorry. Yeah, go to the one back. There we go. So Chantrell Lane, again, shown in yellow, that's one of those replacement easements. This easement was provided in replacement/exchange for the quitclaim of other easements. So landowners whose legal access or lack thereof and were unaffected by Lopez, such as the parcel in question, were not a party to the replacement easements. And this is kind of an important distinction that we'll get into in just a moment.
So are you saying then it's likely that they lost an easement when the lake was filled?
I'm saying the opposite. That having not possessed a prior easement, they were not subject to, they were not a party to the Chantrell easement. So you have an easement from me. I build a lake that cut off your easement. I'm going to give you another easement as mitigation for that loss.
Right. Well, that's what I meant to say.
Yeah, this parcel in particular, there's no record that it possessed any prior legal access and therefore was not offered legal access during the creation of Lopez.
But I guess the Chantrell Road easement, that was somebody that had another easement that was lost, and Chantrell basically replaced the easement that was lost.
Precisely.
Thank you.
Several somebodies, right?
This, yeah, there were several parcels
back in there.
Yeah, back in what's called Clatber Canyon, which lost their access due to construction of the lake, and were then in exchange for that. So this is where the money came into play, and the money was the Davis-Grunsky Act. The money was very specific that this money could not be used to acquire or provide for additional accesses, but only it was mitigation dollars. So the easement was essentially offered in exchange for a quitclaim. So it was a one-for-one exchange.
So logistical question for you, Josh. Sorry. So is that a public easement or a private easement?
It is a private easement.
It is a private. Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
I just had a question that too on that chanterelle easement. Made the terrain may not support it, but could the folks that own the chanterelle easement give access to this property in question from their easement to go across to get to that land somehow? It may not work from the geography, but they could, if it's a private easement, they could grant
They cannot.
It's limited to this prop to those folks already.
That's correct.
They can't grant somebody else.
They cannot grant over their grant. That's correct.
All right.
The only way that the right is transferable would be through a property
right
transaction.
All right. Thank you.
We had thought about that also.
Okay.
Yeah. And again, just to kind of check our background, we staff did do some extensive research and to make sure that the parcel in question was not overlooked during the creation of Lopez, and to date we have found no evidence that access to the parcel, at least through properties affected by Zone 3, existed at the time that Lopez was created. So as far as we can tell, the landlocked nature of the parcel does predate the creation of Lopez. And it was additionally unaffected by its creation. So, there's two criteria you had to meet. You had to have had access that was, you had to have had access, number one, and it had to have been adversely affected, number two. And neither of those conditions existed to have created the right to this replacement easement. Specifically with Chanterelle Lane. So Chanterelle Lane is an easement in favor of a number of parcels within Clatber Canyon, south of Zone 3 property. It is accessed through, it's a private dirt road. It is gated and maintained without, so far as we can tell, without written agreement by the property owners who use it. It is not county maintained by any stretch of the imagination. County staff, specifically Water Quality Lab, does use the road to access what is called, this is actually the Arroyo Grande Creek leg of Lopez. So we do use that road to get access back to the creeks to do water sampling when there's water back there. So interestingly though, the northeasterly corner of the parcel in question, so here, Mr. Castaneda's parcel, a single point is coincidental with, which is very hard to see here, my apologies. And Trey, if you could point, is it possible to point to that black line corner? So, nope, down. There you go. So that corner is the northeasterly corner of the Castaneda parcel, and it is coincidental at a single point with the easement, and we can't tell how or why the easement touches at that location. All I can assume is that the easement was written to follow the legal ease of the adjoining parcel lines, because it actually fronts these other parcels along the. No, I'm just trying to back up. The remote's not working. Okay. And in Chanterelle Lane, actually, as you saw from the previous slide, as it goes further to the south and to the east, it gets further and further away from the subject parcel. So kind of back to action that we're looking for and just some considerations to make. Again, tonight what's being proposed is really conceptual. It's the idea of the applicant's ability to get from point A to point B going through zone three property via an easement. Some of the additional details related to the use of the property and or the ultimate use of the property, ultimate disposition, that's something that the applicants here, they may be able to get into some more of those details tonight. But it's additionally something that will be necessary through the land use entitlement process. And again, going back, we did take this item to TAC, and they were at least supportive of the concept moving forward. Their advisement to the advisory committee was, as I've already mentioned, stay involved through the development of the agreement process, and if it's supported by the board and goes into the land use process, continue that the advisory committee would just continue to be involved, or of course staff would do that, specifically related to items of watershed and water quality and operations of the lake. And before you ask, in the past the district has received requests. This is not the first time someone's asked for an easement through zone three. In times of the past, including the most recently, we always recommend that property owners work with their private landowner neighbors to gain access first. That is frankly the preference, and as you can imagine, this is a slightly more difficult process. And in the past, that's as far as it's gotten, as far as the county is aware. I think that most other landowners who've been seeking access, they either abandon it or they have been successful in getting it through private property. There are, I don't have the exact number, but there's about a dozen parcels, not in this particular area, but around the entire lake, that are either adjacent to or affected by Zone 3 property. There's about a dozen parcels that have what I would call inferior access, meaning that they either do not have it at all, they're landlocked, so there are other landlocked parcels in this area, or there are parcels that possess vastly inferior legal access. So they may have a mapped easement, but it is impassable or undevelopable based on county code or county restrictions. So there are other parcels that could benefit from the granting of easements within Zone 3. And again, based on staff's research, Zone 3 has never granted an easement beyond those which were granted during the creation of Lopez as replacement easements. And again, resulting in no net gain in access in the vicinity of Zone 3. So I guess just, you know, be mindful of those things when, I guess, developing your feedback and actions moving forward. So moving on to back to kind of going full circle and going back to requested action. So number one, we're just looking for some feedback from the committee. Staff is involved, and we need feedback. Obviously, the applicant would enjoy having some feedback from the committee as well. So for the applicant's perspective, they're seeking the support of the committee in this item being they're seeking the support of the committee for the concept of the granting of an easement, the next step being development of an agreement which would go to the board.
Thank you.
I think that's the... So if there's any more questions for me, I'll take those, and I can invite also the applicant up. And if there's members of the public, I'm sure you'd probably like to hear from them too.
Kristen?
So I think you said two different things, so I'm not sure. So they have asked the neighbors for the possibility of using their land for an easement, or no, that they haven't done that yet. They came to the county first.
The county's...
The Zone 3 board first.
The county's... canned answer as it relates to requests in Zone 3.
No, I know the canned answer. I'm asking if the applicant has asked, do you know if they've asked?
We're unaware of.
Okay, I'll save that. Okay. Yeah. And then is there water allocated for this parcel? I mean, this is just a landlocked parcel that has no water rights, or?
We're unaware of any water rights.
Okay. And then in the staff report, it mentions that the TAC was basically supportive of moving forward, but they had a lot of issues because they didn't know what the easement or the parcel was going to be ultimately developed into or for. So moving forward, I saw all the different steps, but it's going to go back to the TAC when we get a lot more information, then come back to us, or just go back to the TAC and then go to the planning?
There is not a protocol for this for such a request, so we're all charting through.
It's like a virgin request.
Yes, yeah. This is you got two back to back. Congratulations. The way that we'll back up even further. So after Mr. Castaneda purchased the property, mm-hmm. he sent a letter to it might have been Phil Acosta in the right-of-way division, right. asking to that his parcel be included with the added to the roster, essentially.
Right, I saw that in the staff report. Okay.
So, in response, the county, or excuse me, the district, asked that we come to terms on a reimbursement agreement, that some kind of formal request, more than just a written letter, be made. Ergo, the map that we have before us tonight, and generally outlined a process that would ultimately result in two major milestones. One, crafting of an agreement for taking possession of the easement, and which would then allow the applicant to partake of the land use process. And that would be milestone number two, would be going through land use. So the zone we're in now is looking for support to move
consider
forward.
Consider an yeah. easement depending on.
Sure.
Okay.
There's a lot of hurdles that would have to be crossed as part of that easement. The property would have to be assessed. You would have to get appraisals of the value of the granting of the easement. Payment would have to be made. Terms as far as what that payment amount is. More than likely, the agreement would be conditional and would not be open-ended. I would envision that the county council would not agree to granting of an easement on a property that has no land use rights to an easement at this point.
Okay. That answers my question enough. I'd like after questions hear from the applicant and go from there. Thank you.
Other questions with the committee at this point? So with that, we'll hear from the applicant.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Thanks, Josh.
Thank you, Josh. Now I'm confused. Good evening, committee members. My name's Carol Florence. I'm a principal planner with Oasis Associates, located in San Luis Obispo. I'm proudly here this evening representing Carlos Castaneda and his family. I want to thank Josh, at least to the extent that we did formalize the agreement to move forward in this process, and that was to sign a reimbursement agreement. The initial deposit was $10,000, so I want to make sure that everyone realizes that as wonderful Public Works staff is, they're not doing this out of the goodness of their heart. It's because we have a reimbursement agreement in place. Josh has been out to the site with us, and it is interesting. It's hard to tell from these, and you know, as much as I'd love to have an advisory committee come out and walk the site. There are actually dirt roads all over my client's property and all over, basically. So I suppose I should start by asking, as I do any advisory committee, for your feedback, as Josh mentioned, and your support to continue to move through the process. I think we would move through the process regardless, if you will. But I think it's important since you are the, if you will, owners of this property, and we would be asking you ultimately, granted it's the Board of Supervisors who would make that call, but asking you as part owners for an access easement, not unlike private property owner to private property owner. So I think that the history is something that we know as much as we know. I think my clients purchased the property believing that they were going to be able to obtain access. My clients have a vision. They currently hike on the property, unfortunately access it illegally, unless you can find that one little point where Chanterelle touches the property. So I think with that, as law-abiding citizens, that they wanted to perfect a legal easement at a minimum to be able to be hikers or pedestrians to get there. I think if you're going to go to this extent, you're probably going to want something a little wider than that that looks kind of like Chanterelle and a right-of-way. And I suppose the purpose at this point was just to legally get on the property, and I can certainly let my client speak to it, but he's also been a long time, or actually born and bred, San Luis Obispo County resident, and he has a vision and a dream for this property. It's rural lands. From a land use perspective, you can have a private residence. Rural lands allows agriculture, although there may be an average or an overall steepness to the property. It's my understanding that there are a number of areas on all of this acreage that aren't. As you know, hills come up, they can plateau and then drop back down again. So he sees this as supporting two important points in his life. One is raising his children and teaching them a work ethic, and with that comes perhaps some agricultural work because he is familiar and works on many different farms in both this county and Santa Barbara County. So he knows how to farm responsibly, but I also think it has to do, and maybe that would be a first step, farming and maybe a house. But I think those are the kinds of things that, you know, we're in that chicken egg. If I can't get there, I'm really not going to be able to utilize my property to any great extent. And therein lies the dilemma. So what we're attempting to do is analyze and investigate an opportunity to actually reach his property. So, Committee Member Barnes, when you ask about have you talked to the neighbors, we can get to the property through the Hermrick's property coming from the south, and we have approached them. And I think as most property owners who own property of similar ilk, if you will, having an easement across it is not something that you welcome, but we've asked. When Karen Ray was supervisor, she attempted to put a meeting together with some of the adjacent property owners. Unfortunately, no one responded to her, so that was unfortunate. It is interesting, if you could go to the next slide, perhaps. Some of the history, back one, sorry. Some of the history, I think, is what we don't know as well. This property had been in a family from back east. It was passed down through a number of heirs. So when Lopez was created, the county may have reached out to them. The heirs may have received notification, but quite obviously didn't pursue anything. They were on the East Coast. This was here. But I think there's gaps in that history, and I don't think my client would have gone forward with the purchase had he not had some legal counsel that said that at least knew who the previous owners were and that there may have been some reaching out to them, but it wasn't really on their radar. Where's Lopez? Where's San Luis Obispo County? I'm back east. It is interesting, though, as Josh pointed out, that Chanterelle hits the property at a point. and I'm going to ask you to help me with this because I need to stay at the mic, but the access easement, interestingly enough, stops. If you go to the bottom right, you can see it stops at that easement. There's a sliver of green that belongs to you, and then there's a property to the right of that where there's an existing house. I don't believe, and I do have, and maybe I should just show you how this looks here. If you don't mind, I'll just show you, and you can just pass this around. I'm sorry. I thought there was going to be an Elmo, but there's no Elmo here. So let me just show you real quickly. So we're talking about Mr. Castaneda's property. That little bitty C right there belongs to y'all. This is a private residence on D. The easement kind of just stops here. So I don't know about precedent or not, and there's a little closer shot here. Go back to the mic. So I know that being in the business I have been for so long, that government setting precedent is not something that is taken lightly nor done often. But I also think that precedent doesn't necessarily always have to mean negative. It can be a positive precedent as well. With that said, there are just some interesting pieces to this puzzle, where access occurs, where there may have been reaching out to previous property owners. They never did anything about it. That was a long time ago. Records aren't that great. The easement touches the property, but the easement stops at a certain point, yet there's another residence beyond where that easement stops. I'm not sure that anyone knows how all of these things occurred. So what we're asking for is, I suppose, the ability to spend some more money to see if we can ground truth this, because I understand from the tax perspective as well as yours that it is all about water quality. I understand that, I accept that, and I think that that's why you see two road alternatives. There's a short one and there's a longer one that may in fact provide better sensitivity from an environmental perspective, but I can't even get there to bring that kind of information back to you unless I'm able to explore an easement agreement and get to the Board of Supervisors, because that's the next stopping point, frankly. We wouldn't get any farther than that if the board says no. So I suppose this evening we're not asking for your approval necessarily, but a recommendation to continue our analysis, continue exploring in a legal realm, in a political realm, if you will, and if that comes to fruition and we can get through those hurdles, then we would be looking at the environmental realm to see from a physical standpoint and getting back to your concerns about water quality in this watershed. So I'm hoping that I simplified that a tad bit, that there are some unknowns, but I'm here today because if there's one thing I know, I can't change history, no matter what it is. But I think we can move forward together, and I think all of you have been doing what you've been doing, and you donate your time to what you're doing currently. You know that this process can be lengthy and expensive, but the good part about it is it is thorough, and it is publicly accessible, if you will, if people want to contribute their concerns and thoughts as we go through that process. So I suppose, like I would do if I were asking for a general plan amendment, I wanted to change the zone on a piece of property, I'd be standing before the Board of Supervisors to allow us to move forward with that exploration. So if I could distill anything this evening, and I'm not asking for approval, I'm asking for a recommendation to allow us to continue in a process that is very well established. With that said, I'm more than happy to entertain any of your questions or comments, and would appreciate the opportunity to continue to move forward. And as we do, We'll be coming back probably with easement language if we're so lucky, and coming back with all sorts of things to make certain that we are addressing your concerns and the things that are under your purview. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Committee questions?
I have no questions.
Ed, anything? Jeff, no? And I think, you know, my hearing the conversation is this committee doesn't have the ability to stop it. Again, we're looking, I think staff is looking for input. You're looking for input in terms of what the committee's concerns are. And I think those have somewhat been reflected, maybe a little off the cuff, that our focus is on, and I'll speak for myself anyway, my focus is on the potential impacts to the water quality of the lake, and how the easement and or land use above in the watershed may affect that. So that would be the kinds of things that I would look for as a committee member as this thing works its way through the process. But I don't, and I guess we'll leave it up to the committee members as well. I don't know if we need a motion or if we can just provide input, but I'd entertain committee members' thoughts at this point.
Gotcha. And maybe Ms. Flores, I appreciate the kind of the wrapping up of where the process is going, because I'm supportive of you moving to the next step, I guess, is where my initial comment is with regards to making sure that, yes, the stormwater quality of the lake is maintained, whether that's through erosion control protections or some other method as they get further into the detailed process. But I think I would also kind of hazard a, going towards what Ms. Lucy was saying, is I wouldn't be supportive of them being annexed into Zone 3 from a water quality standpoint, not water, from a water quantity standpoint. So a water source should not be Zone 3 water for this property. So it looks like the boundary of that is right at the edge, clearly. And so it'd be difficult for us to have a service provided to this property from an accessible location. So those would be my biggest concerns, is A, or actually three, exhaust opportunities for private discussions, maintain water quality, and an alternate water source besides Zone 3.
Would not support Zone 3. Yeah. Ed?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, if I may, before taking comments, I would recommend addressing questions to Ms. Florence or myself, and then giving opportunity for public to speak, and then moving to discussion of potential motion or support,
okay,
or unsupport of the item.
Yeah, thank you. I think the committee didn't have any additional questions for Ms. Florence at this point. Would open it up to any other public comments. Thank you, Josh.
Hello, my name is Ken Kliss, and I'm representing the Clapboard Canyon residents. There's three parcels that are currently accessed by this road, and the two other parcel owners are there with me tonight, and we oppose this 100% for a lot of reasons. We're looking tonight, hopefully, to get the board to not support the process and move forward. Ms. Florence misspoke several times. She claimed there was dirt roads all over that parcel. The parcel averages amazingly steep 80% slopes. There's never been a road up there, and I doubt a road can ever be built up there unless you had millions of dollars in civil engineering and flood control measurements. She also said the applicants believed they had access when they bought the parcel. Mm-hmm. I met with the applicants. His partner is a professional developer who specializes in steep and constrained lot development. And they knew, the prior owner had disclosed that the parcel never had access and never will. So Mrs. Florence somehow said they believed they had access. I don't know where she got that from. She might want to maybe clarify that, yeah. But both the seller and the realtor declared that it never had access and it never will. It's an SRA. It's a beautiful area. The road they want to build goes into a steep canyon with no shoulders on the creek and more 80-90% slopes. It's home to 31 mammals, 4 or 5 federally protected species, and you would have to cut down probably a they're claiming an 1,800-foot access road. I measured it more about a half a mile, probably over 100 trees to build a road into that area. I did catch them. They had climbed the fence.
Can you address us and not? I'm right here. Can you just address us and not?
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
When I first met them, they had climbed the fence that said no trespassing, and I was helping them out for a while, giving them some information, but they got very aggressive. I got hostile emails demanding all my documents. They told me they just wanted to camp with their nephews. Then they said they already had access, and between them and Miss Florence, it just seems to be a lot of misinformation and a lot of smoke screens. I got a lot of other stuff. I know it's late, but our three parcels were the parcels served by the Davis-Gerensky Act and funds, and it is. I don't think it's legal to provide access through land that was taken from our parcels through the exchange and given it back to another parcel. That would be one of the major prohibitions, I think, on this ever coming to fruition. I have talked to representatives from the Chumash group, and they have very sensitive areas there that they are adamantly opposed to ever having a road or development on that lot. That was only verbal at this point. They paid $385 an acre, and adjacent lands that had access have sold for $185,000 an acre. I know they have a team of lawyers and professional planners on their side. We're unrepresented at this point. But we feel that this has been going on for 4 years now. I made a presentation to Zone 3 in January of 2014, which I'm sure is in the archives. But we feel that if you stop the process now, it would save the county a lot of money, it would save us a lot of hassle, and it would be the prudent thing to do. And also, their survey stops well short of anything they're indicating on that map. They've only surveyed 642 feet of the currently unused portion of the access area, and they're claiming they can get to their property in 1,200 feet, but that's a completely oak-studded canyon. Like I said, the sides are 80% slopes, and there's a year-round water supply in there that it's the only undeveloped water supply in the region year-round, particularly during drought years, so it's critical to wildlife and habitat as well. And I got tons of more stuff, but I know it's late, and I know this is early in the process,
yep.
But I just wanted to stress that all the current owners are adamantly opposed to this.
Okay, appreciate that.
We're going to continue our opposition.
And I think you understand, as I've stated before, this committee can't approve we are advisory in nature to the flood control district and the Board of Supervisors. But
right, I would just refer back to the original four options that Joshua said. No recommendation, support, not support, or continue it. And we're hoping for the not support at this point.
Thank you. Others from the public wishing to comment?
Yeah, my name is Bruce Morrison. I'm adjacent to where they're going to be, to that corner right there. They've never even talked to me about accessing my property up to there. And that map is definitely not true there, because their property doesn't come close to that road right now. So, and I've lived up there for 30 years right now, and it places harmony back there. And these people want to develop this area, and it's a sensitive resource area with all the animals. What's going to happen to all the animals there? And then what's going to happen when they cut the roads and the erosion there? When we had that big storm 7 years ago, the whole front gate gave way there, so the soil's unstable there, and they're planning on creating roads there. You have that whole thing down in the lake when the lake's full. And then when I developed that property 30 years ago, we had an artesian well, and the well has gotten lower and lower every year, and it, when the rains, it gets, there's more volume. So, and then they're going to take from that, eventually they're going to take from the lake, and they're going to take from my property too. It's going to end up like in Paso Robles there with the wineries, and they're going to drill deeper because they have more money than me, and then my well is going to go dry. So then I'm going to have to deal with that. And I'm retired now, and I can't fight these people. And his plan is to develop that whole area. And it, the roads are going to, the initial road going in is basically a one-lane road, and that's going to have to be widened. And there's just so much that they're not telling you there. And they've never even talked to me. They've never even sent me a letter. As she claims, she sent out letters. So I'd like to get this thing resolved here because I would like to be able to enjoy my property there because I can't deal with these people. I'm going to be forced to sell the place. And with the water levels low and then with them developing it now, I can't sell it without disclaiming that. So I wish you could do something here and resolve this matter here and put it to a vote there. He's got no desire moving his family up there. He just wants to develop it and make more money. So that's it. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morrison. Any other comments from public at this point? Real quick, please.
I did meet with Ms. Ray a couple of years ago. Ms. Florence said again that nobody had met with her per her request. I did.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Back to the committee at this point.
I guess I want to limit my... I think it's appropriate for the county supervisors to look at these other kinds of issues. I'm just looking at what impact would have on on my city, if you will, representing my city and, you know, the watershed. I am concerned about as I mentioned, water quality and water quantity. If there is ag use, that has a potential for some negative water quality issues. If there's runoff or something, I'm not saying you couldn't get around it, but it has potential, and then possible maybe minor loss of water quantity and easements or something that are seems like in this case purely discretionary. And if I'm going to move something forward, I would want something that would be beneficial to the district, and I don't see that this is beneficial to the district. So I'm inclined to to recommend no further action or to recommend no approval of the easement at this point, although I want to hear my fellow committee members also.
I have a business relationship with Mr. Castaneda, and I think it's probably best that I recuse myself.
What transparency. Thank you, sir.
Committee members to my right, do you have any thoughts, inputs?
Well, I can understand that he owns the property. It's landlocked. I believe that Director English was supportive of moving forward with some stipulations as far as what kind of easement. Couldn't be an exclusive easement. You know, the county still has to have access, et cetera, et cetera. There's so much that we don't know. It's hard to make a decision because depending on what goes on there, it's going to affect the watershed, or it's not going to. If we go from one end where he just wants to access his property to hike or camp, well, you know, of course that's not going to affect much. But then if we go to development and cutting down hundreds of trees and erosion and a subdivision, well, that's totally different. So I haven't seen the property. Usually when I make decisions like this, I visit the property. I'm a little tentative to even say let's move ahead because I just don't know what else is going to come down the road. I think that I would err on the side of if the applicant's willing to move forward and spend the time and energy to go a little bit further, I think that would be okay with me. I think there's plenty of people beyond us that are going to take a look at this and weigh in on it, and so that would be my thought for now. Thank you.
Well, first of all, there was I still haven't gotten to the bottom of why we need a big easement to go camping. So I can't quite figure out why we need this road to cut through. I appreciate people who are impacted coming and speaking to this tonight. I see extreme value in that because we only hear the county's position and the vested interest of the property owner. You had mentioned in your presentation that you wanted to do agriculture, but then of course it was disclosed that there was no water on the property, but then others say that no, there is water on the property. So I have to go back to future consequences of allowing this easement. Of course, you know, you can do whatever you want to do, but I would really hate to see, I see that the risk is far outweighs the benefit to our watershed. Then you're starting to impact, you know, 70, 75,000 people by putting our watershed at risk. So I would lean on the side of caution, and probably I'm not supportive of this easement because I don't believe that that's what the easement's for, hiking. I just don't believe, I'm sorry. So, and for the name of water, I'm not going to support it.
Jeff, you have any thoughts you want to share? And we'll maybe then try to bring this back to the committee for some kind of either formal action, more formal than what we've offered input. And I think maybe that's enough. Or if the committee is inclined, we could bring up some kind of a motion, I think, as well.
And I think my my input from before public comment has not predominantly changed, with the exception that I will add that going forward, I don't know if I could support it, but I am willing to allow the applicant to have further discussion so that we can get further clarified and to see what comes back from County Council in a manner that would protect the Zone 3 watershed. And so if they're willing to do that, I'd like to see where the Public Works and County Council come back with ways to protect the watershed. So and if that's supportable by the committee and we're comfortable with that, then perhaps it goes forward. I'd be very hesitant to understand where County Council could come up with things that would protect the watershed, but if the applicant is willing to try, I'm willing to give them that option.
I guess I've got a suggestion, maybe, and Ed, do you want to? Were you going in that direction as well, as far as trying to bring this to some kind of conclusion? Let me throw it out there and see what you think. I mean, I think short of a motion, and depending on again if the committee members agree, I think it's my sense is that we've heard that the committee members have significant concerns about the easement based on. I think the potential water quality impacts, and also the fact that there are so many unknowns yet at this point, just due to where the project is, that if put to a vote, so to speak, at this point, we would probably be inclined to deny. We don't have that authority, but I think if something along those lines of that the committee is has significant concerns about it. But is not, as Jeff has said, we're not opposed to the applicant continuing with the process through the process with the county. I don't know if that's too weak for you know, some of the committee members, or Ed, if you want to comment on that.
Yeah, I'm just as I say, it just seems to me that you generally don't hand out easements unless there's some public benefit, in this case anyway, and it's a watershed. And I'm concerned about any negative impacts on the watershed. So I appreciate that you know, there is a desire to have some access to it, but there's apparently no historic access to it. It's been landlocked forever. And I guess trying to open up access to a watershed, I just have a lot of concerns. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, whether you want to have a straw vote where we're, you know, just kind of raise hands who's in favor, who's opposed, or versus I think kind of, I think, somewhere in the middle. We have a lot of concerns. We don't like a lot of the parts of it, but at the same time, some of us would be okay with moving it forward to clarify where it's coming from. I guess I'm more in the standpoint, I just don't like it from the standpoint that it's discretionary. It conveys additional value to the property, which I have no problem with, but I'm just concerned about watershed quality and the quantity of water, too. If they start an ag operation, that does have some, perhaps small, but some impact on the water. It just seemed like it's a very isolated, rugged area, and I'm not sure I'm willing to open that up in any fashion at this point, at least from the water. I'm just looking at the watershed, period. Other, as I say, the county has other issues they would deal with. I'm just looking at the watershed.
So do you need an actual formal motion?
We don't actually need a formal motion. We were looking for
consensus.
Not necessarily consensus. The primary objective was looking for feedback, which I think you've all provided. We appreciate that, and I'm assuming the applicant appreciates it also. Obviously, the applicant, I'm sure, would like to see the next step, which is a support, is an affirmation of this item moving forward. This might be helpful in your discussions. That's not sure. I'm trying to go to one. Here we go. That's the slide I was looking to get last time. I'm so sorry. Mm-hmm. Hopefully this helps you a little bit. By adding some confusion, I'm hoping to help. This lovely chart depicts, in frankly the most simplistic sense possible, the process that the applicant would be going through after drafting of an agreement. Once the agreement was drafted, it would go into the hands of county council. There would likely be some back and forth with staff coming and getting input from the advisory committee. That would, as you can see, it's probably going to take a couple of rounds. Legal ease is not usually something that's easy to put together. And suppose that all parties could agree, that would be put into a staff report and taken to the Board of Supervisors acting on behalf of Zone 3. You can see that's about the top, what I've just described to you is about the top third of this chart. That process could result in either the agreement being kicked back for comments, it could be approved, or just frankly denied. And that's that creates its own. All of those things can create different outcomes. In the event that it's approved, then they would start the land use application process through planning and building. It would become subject to CEQA. They would make a determination whether it would require an EIR or some kind of mitigated negative declaration. They would have to put together some kind of schematic engineering plans that would show the alignment. If there's going to be retaining walls, they would have to embark on. That's when the real dollars would get spent. They'd have to get into issues related to geology and hydraulics, studying the watershed. But what I'm trying to show you here is that there's multiple periods during this process in which not only staff but the advisory committee would have input,
and I think the committee understands that.
Okay.
That there's significant process. We're at the very tippy top of this.
Very that's
correct. But maybe along Ed's, and again I'm trying to get us out of here at some point, is kind of a straw vote, and based on the way I'm reading the room, there is at least three committee members who would say we're not supportive of this at all, and I would characterize maybe Jeff and I as being cautiously not even supportive, I guess, but have significant concerns, but not opposed to it moving forward.
I'm just really on the fence because I'm not sure exactly what the easement is for. I don't have enough information, so I don't feel like it's real. What?
I was going to say, just based on the information.
Yeah, I just don't feel I can really make an informed vote. I'm happy to give the feedback. Like I said, Director English and I spoke, and I gave those notes as well. But I'm, you know, I can definitely see Ed's point of view, and I can definitely see Jeff's point of view. So, I mean, obviously, that's a lot of hoops to jump through, and so I appreciate that. But if the applicant is willing to go to the next step, I mean, I'd like to know what county council thinks about giving it part of an easement back to, you know, someone that doesn't have a right because these other landowners have the right. So it's just, I mean, I don't even mean to be vague, but so that's why I was in favor. I have a lot of reservations, but I was in favor of it going to the other agencies and having the applicant be able to take it to the next step. I mean, it might get stopped right at the next step.
Well, maybe if I could add something else, as I say, I didn't make a motion because I didn't think we had consensus one way or the other.
Right.
So I was hesitant to try to make a motion and to have it split somehow. Mm-hmm. But I think almost all of us are concerned about the ag use of it. If it went beyond hiking, once you have ag use, it seems to me that could lead to water quality issues, and that's where I'm kind of coming down. If you're just going to hike, I have no problem, but once you bring in the ag use, then it seems to me it weights against approval. I mean, it would weight against recommending approval to the board for that sole reason. So. Is that something we're all kind of agreed on, that mm-hmm. ag use is something we would not favor since it has potential for negative watershed impacts?
Yes. You know, and also, too, is that what we're 4 years into this, how much more hundreds of thousands of dollars are we going to waste in staff time, attorney times, you know, on a piece of property that most of us doesn't have an EIR, doesn't have any of the things that we know that we all need? I mean, it seems like you're fighting to keep this wheel going, and I don't think this is a good example to test it often, you know, this strategy. So I'm adamantly opposed to this, and I would stop the process right now.
Well, should we make a motion and see where it goes? Is that mm-hmm. something that...
I think we could. At least Josh could go back with...
at least have some formal... I move that we recommend the process not move. Let's see. I think would ultimately go to the Board of Supervisors, so I guess the motion would be that we recommend. I move we recommend that the board not approve this project. Does that sound? Is that close enough to this? Because I'm trying to think of some other way to do. Because right now it's in the staff level.
Or maybe and the next step is more staff level. So we're simply looking for. There's not a project before you.
I know.
There's a request for an easement.
Well, I can't. I think you know all of our feedback.
Yeah.
If it's going to staff anyway, I think that it needs to be explored anyway. I don't know if you need a formal motion. I mean, you know where we all stand. Depending on how the motion comes out, is it going to be different? Oh, okay. Well, then.
I don't think a motion is necessary.
Okay.
If there was some degree of either overwhelming desire for the item to come back, overwhelming desire to move forward, or frankly, overwhelming desire to deny it, I think that's another item. It's completely acceptable for the committee to be to have questions and be split. The primary objective was to receive feedback. Ultimately, this at this point, it's the decision of the applicant,
yeah,
whether they're going to exhaust their options as far as coming to some terms with county council. It makes it easier for them if there is support. It becomes more difficult when the items is either not supported or
they have feedback from the committee
that's what I'm trying to give you. If I could be of assistance, I might suggest, if you're trying to put a bookend on this discussion, that the committee could simply take no action. such as the last item.
Well, no formal action, but I mean, I think we've provided the input that is helpful for staff to take this to the next level. And again, I think as much as that can be captured in the minutes and then move forward at staff level, I agree. I don't think we really need a motion unless you need one.
Yeah. And he already said he didn't.
Yep. And there's also the condition of precedence, which you outlined at the very beginning. If this moves forward, then we could very well expect additional requests for easements, and that would keep coming, I suspect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then this item would come back, in November, more than likely, to this meeting.
Okay. Thank you. And thanks for the folks that took the trouble to come tonight. Appreciate that. It's a long, dark drive home.
Yeah.
Be safe out there.
Stay on your side of the road. I had to say it.
So I think this concludes our regular, our action items, future agenda items. Were you going to touch on that, Andrea? Or
we
can just leave those two items on there, A and B,
and then we'll add this as an item. Perhaps it's an informational item in November or in January. Other than that, unless you have anything that you'd like me to add to November's agenda, then we'll just have those three items.
Okay. And no doubt an update on the CIP projects and all the other operational things. Yeah.
Always.
Before we leave the future agenda items on the funding of groundwater modeling, so has staff had an opportunity to speak with SLO, San Luis Obispo Sanitation District, with regards to their resolution of the lawsuit with the regional board? Because there was some discussion of groundwater modeling funding coming from a portion of that that settlement, if I remember correctly.
That's right. You remember correctly.
I personally am unaware of any discussions. I don't know. Maybe Josh can add.
And in fact, I think Mr. Ogren sent staff a letter on that as well.
Okay. Yeah.
I could be wrong,
To include in that discussion when it comes back to the committee.
And the connection here is for funding the groundwater
model. For funding the groundwater model, correct.
Yeah, is it the contribution
form of a
to the
supplemental road. Environmental project.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. All righty. Any other? Moving to the next item and last item, and I'll have to apologize for a long meeting this time. The committee member comments. Everybody's talked out. I say we adjourn.
Thank you, sir.
Well said.
It's a good facility.
Thank you.